Put a positive spin on this whole thing. Here comes DK Aniwa. That's a lovely ball through. Oh, that's a lovely turn. Look at this. It's a goal. It's a thing of beauty. Goal! How about you now, David Marver? DK Aniwa with the assist. Lovely turn. Talk about the number nine play. Center forward. Have yourself a game. It's one all.
Fate up against a windmill. Through the thick and thin, he will wait until you give yourself to him.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Gwintelligence Podcast. I am David Marver of Change the Padres, live at the Lost Abbey Tasting Room here in San Alejo with the entire Gwintelligence gang.
Is this the first time?
Yeah. That's the first time I met Corey, ever.
Corey doesn't have a mic. We only have three mics, yeah.
Corey, I'm going to yell from the background.
It's nice here. It's a nice day here in San Alejo. You guys have been keeping the streets clean, it looks like.
Yeah, you know, I realized what San Alejo reminds me of. It's Arizona. It's like a very well-planned area.
That's,
you know, like,
that's a really awful insult. Like, this is their home. Why would you say that?
You know, there's some parts of area, like Scottsdale is a very nice place. Not that I want to live there, and I don't want to live here either.
You're insulting them again. Well, hey, I mean, it looks like this place. I don't want to live there, but like,
here's nice though. Look at these little streets. You know, one-way roads, great stuff. You just need roundabouts. That'd make it better.
Here's the good news. You have so much student debt, you probably can't afford a place over here yet.
Public school.
Can find a place that you think is California and leave Arizona to Corey and I. We're perfectly happy with that.
I'm sure. You know, how come Marver always does the intro? When did this get decided?
I don't know. He just took the lead on it.
I haven't always done the intro. We've had, I think, two podcasts, I think, where Jag off did the intro. Plus all the ones where, obviously, I'm not on the podcast. But yeah, I don't know why I've always done it.
I mean,
we can have
someone
else do it.
I
don't care.
It's just an intro.
I
find your guys' relationship pretty interesting, how it all began in the first place. And, well, I mean, obviously we know how it all began, but how it's blossomed into what we have today. It's
what,
very interesting.
Marver ignoring me completely and me seeking a divorce of some kind?
It's always entertaining between you two. You know, you're the OG Gwintelligence. Everyone loves it.
All right, well, after your brutal insults against their home, why don't you pass the mic over to Corey so that he can talk on this? Let's pivot into how your behavior could possibly be influenced by the large methane cloud that we're currently sitting in. Because I notice here, I don't see a large filtration system here at the San Alejo Hills Lost Abbey where it could be filtering out the methane. The door is open. It's letting it in.
Look how clear it is out there. It's beautiful.
It's an invisible glass.
This is like people that live in L.A. that are like, you never know. You've never seen a beautiful sunset like you've seen in L.A. because the sun's being filtered through just multiple millions of particles of smog.
Gorgeous sunsets.
It refracts in a way that you just can't see in nature.
The smog rainbow. It's a beautiful thing.
Chad, I'm glad you got us started on insulting San Alejo Hills. Yeah. It's going
well.
You know, I was expecting when I was driving over here the temperature to rise, you know, as usual, but it actually dropped a few degrees, which, you know, I guess it just makes the methane that much more crisper to inhale.
I don't know if you're aware, but former major leaguer Steve Avery allegedly lives up the hill from here, right? Weren't we offered Steve Avery to come on the podcast someday?
By the way, if you haven't seen it yet,
didn't we meet someone at Vine and Tap on the podcast that started talking to us and was like, yeah, Steve Avery's here. You want to talk to him? Or?
Yeah, that was after the Machado signing, and I believe we were all pretty intoxicated. Oh, yeah. So I don't know if we remember
that.
That
guy didn't come through.
While you're in San Alejo, mm-hmm. I recommend driving through here during the evening a little bit further up the hill, and you look north. There are the estates. It's like a new development up there, and they're like $3 million homes. There is one with a gigantic martini glass, like literally like a two-story martini glass that you cannot fucking miss. You have to see it if you're in the area in the evening.
Who would want that? What?
I'm not sure. Apparently, they throw. I have a buddy who lives further up the hill. Apparently, that house just throws ragers like every single night, and it's
they better
kind of
than.
A
this is great.
An annoying
this is
ordinance.
Like, this is
but
like
you
some
can't miss it. It's incredible.
Town in Iowa. That's like, man, we've got the largest ball of twine in the entire world.
It really is Arizona. That's what I'm saying. They gotta have
the
their.
It's the thing on yeah. Interstate 8 or 10 or whatever.
What is that? That giant thermometer on the way to Vegas? Is that the comparison you're making here?
In Baker? No, the thing is an actual thing. You've never actually driven through Arizona?
I've driven through Arizona. I just
and you didn't stop at the thing? There's like 15 different...
When I drove through Arizona, I just drove.
Getting a lot of questions.
That was what I did through Arizona. I just drove through it.
Do you want me to spoil
it? I mean, besides
it,
spring training.
So you don't have to pay the ticket next time?
I mean, we could do that, or we could just talk about Padres baseball.
All right,
for
fine,
the first
fine.
Time,
I'll
5 minutes into the
then.
Podcast
you guys
here.
Will never know what the thing is. It's fine.
Leave it to the end for the people that
okay.
got through
oh, yeah.
the
good
entire
call.
Podcast.
That's a good tease.
Yeah. Make people Google it, yeah.
Stay tuned.
So not much has happened since we podcasted most recently. Corey and I met here about a month ago to go over the Tommy Pham trade. The Padres have signed, I think, was it Pierce Brosnan, we said before the podcast. Some useless
That'd
relief
be much
pitcher.
More exciting.
Why are you
but
burying
rumored...
the best part of him, which is the penis euphemism?
Pierce Johnson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is... We've been missing that since we got rid of... Who'd we lose that was our most recent penis euphemism?
Oh, Brad Hand?
Brad Hand,
Brad
yes.
Hand.
Ever
oh.
since we lost
that,
Brad Hand.
A, that was an elite.
Yeah, we've really lost. We've really lost that. So maybe, yeah, that's a good angle for this one.
It's the only angle, right? So Pierce Johnson's not terrible, right? This isn't Kaz Makita.
Wasn't it a minor league
Where we
deal?
Could watch him and be like, the guy throws 79. Like, he's not going to work out here.
Yeah, and, well, the thing with Kaz Makita, too, is like you... If you just clicked on his baseball reference page and clicked on his team and you went to see who else, you know, what is a normal pitching stat line in Japan this year? And you looked at Kaz Makita's the year before he came over, you're like, well, this is like the fifth best relief pitcher on that team. There's no way he's good. Yeah, you're
so,
right in
so
the sense
is,
that he
well,
had a
I
much
didn't
better
do the work on this. What about with Pierce Dick? Is he
Pierced Dick.
It's a better stat line.
Like,
I'm not so
like
sure
comparably to the team or I mean we all know the Japanese league is not the major leagues. Like
it's,
you
it's
can't
not,
just look at the ERA and be like, well that's gonna translate.
Yeah, I think there are some things which translate fairly well and other stats that don't. I think strikeout rate actually can go up when it comes to the US. There's a lot more hitters here that are all or nothing.
Right, but still with home run rate and you know.
Of course, yeah. I mean
dingers.
Generally, pitching stats are going to go down when they come here. But there are a lot of hitting ballparks in Japan, too. There's just a lot of... It's hard to make those comparisons, but...
Well,
if,
you're
when you're
right.
Looking
the style is different, right? It's Punch and Judy style, yeah. You know, base-to-base, manufactured runs baseball.
Yeah, and there's not that many good instances... The thing is, there's not that many good instances of U.S. pitchers going to Japan or going, you know, the Korean League and coming back and doing well. I think the only good one that really comes to mind is Miles Michaelis.
Which everyone jumped to on Twitter and was like, well, he's the next Miles Michaelis.
Yeah, he's not the next Miles Michaelis.
Miles Michaelis went over there for like 4 years and excelled for a long time.
Yeah.
No, he's the next Jesse Hahn.
I hope he is.
Well, no, you don't.
I love Jesse Hahn.
We traded Jesse Hahn for what? Derek Norris? And then Derek Norris it. For yeah. Pedro Avila?
Yeah.
And then just let Pedro Avila go this year? Is
no,
that,
no, no.
Is that what happened?
No, he got Tommy John and then they... outrighted him.
Okay, because of Tommy John, no one claimed him. Mm-hmm. Is that what happened? Okay,
but he had like the two starts up here and had a pretty sick.
Do you remember
curveball,
Jesse Hahn's curveball? It was like the best pitch
I mean,
I've ever
Men's
seen.
Ray always like jacks off to it and posts gifts
regularly.
Yeah, but he's trash. Like he's had like maybe one good year with the A's, right?
Just because he's hurt, he's gonna come around someday.
But, okay.
Hey, aren't you the guy that loves Franchi Cordero? Because hey, he's gonna come around.
Oh
one
yeah,
day.
Franchi's like 24. Jesse Hahn's is 34. Like,
in any case, not much has happened. Obviously, we got this relief pitcher we're arguing about. Uh-huh. They're rumored to be in the mix for a Japanese center fielder.
Shogo
potentially,
Akiyama?
Yes. Possibly corner outfielder, high on base percentage. Yeah. Kind of a 5-tool guy in Japan. I'm not sure if all of those will translate here.
Does he have power? He has the power tool?
He hit like 20.
I thought
yeah,
he was
he's hitting
a
like,
contact guy.
No, he's hitting like 20-something home runs a year over there, which...
But that
I mean, Jabari
to like
Blash,
10 in the US.
Yeah, Jabari Blash at 33, I think, this year over there and had the highest... OPS in the Japanese league, so you
also,
know not the most
we need
promising.
To pay tribute how Jabari has number 69 in the Japan
I
league.
I tried
and
to tell
just
you guys,
crushing
Jabari is a star in the
it.
Making.
He is a star. Like they love him over there, and who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, I mean we love him still, of course.
I've said it before, but I saw him hit a ball in Mexico City like 550 feet. It was incredible. Like he's the only one in the last 10 years of the Padres that could do that. Blanks,
Ryan Schimpf,
him and Blanks. Now Schimpf didn't hit like. Tape measure home runs.
Franchi can.
Yeah, that's right. Franchi
yeah,
can. Franchi
I mean,
can.
Yeah, when
and
he's yeah.
in Mexico
times.
City, Franchi could break 500 feet. I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, Franchi has.
He almost broke 500 feet in Arizona.
Yeah, 480, right? 481 or
yeah.
something?
He had one like that in at Petco, too, didn't he? Like, well, there was like some blowout game he just absolutely
yeah,
annihilated.
Doesn't he hold the record?
Yeah.
For the longest
like he
home
killed
run there?
One there. Yeah.
God, Franchi's. Please, oh. Franchi, please.
It's just, you can't bank on him, though.
I know.
It's like banking on Garrett Richards. You know, whatever you get out of him, I just look at it as a bonus. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Everyone's banking on Garrett Richards for some
reason. And they really are. Yeah, they really are. Well, and there's a lot of people with Franchi, too. It's like, that's going to be our starting center fielder. It's like, dude, he's made of China.
I mean, Margot's a decent center fielder, really. Like, he's about average with room to grow, too.
He's average, like, right? He's a two-war center fielder.
Yeah, and, like, that's, I mean, with really good defense in Petco, with, like, our shitty other defensive outfielders, like, that's fine if we don't have, like, Hosmer being a black hole at the plate and Hedges.
But we do.
But we do.
But we do.
The thing with Richards is you're making two assumptions with him, right? One, that he'll stay healthy, which is probably the biggest assumption.
Yeah.
And two, that he'll actually be good. And I think the second assumption is just being taken by everyone as, well, of course, he's going to go back to how he was 4 years ago.
The spin rate.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't good last year. We all watched him, right? We watched those starts, totally unnecessary starts.
Well, what did he have? He had, two? Was it two starts? Or
three or four starts, I think.
Was it that many?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
He had, two, pretty decent ones, and then he got totally crushed the other ones, which is,
but even the decent ones weren't good. They were decent. They were, three runs in five innings, good, right? Which isn't actually good.
I thought he had a couple,
for the Padres, points. It's great.
Yeah.
So, I think there's this idea that, he's going to be...
Did he get into the sixth? I mean,
do you want him as the opening day starter? Do you think he's an ace?
He's an ace. No, I'm hoping for 15 good starts out of him before his arm falls off and then they go to Gore. I think he's the bridge to Gore.
I think we should be hoping for 15 starts because I think it's a huge assumption to think you're getting good starts out of him.
Yeah.
Consistent good starts.
Right, yeah. No, I agree with you on that.
I mean, if he gets average, 15, in total average starts, that's, fine. It's not worth the $15 million that we gave him, but it's, it's better than probably Davies.
Oh, well, I heard from Padres Farm that it's unfair for us to evaluate him as a $15 million player, that he's only an $8
million
player.
It really should be more than $15 million because you have to, discount forward last year's salary. So really, it should be more like 16 or 17.
I debated whether to get into that on Twitter on whether we should be applying a discount factor onto it, and I just walked
away. It's not worth it. It's not worth it.
I mean, I'll ask Marver, because he probably has a good basis for this, but how many – I mean, let's ignore the injuries. How many pitchers – how old is he? He'll be 33 going into the season? How many pitchers are dominant or even very good at that age? Taking away injuries and not pitching for 4 years. It's not a slam dunk that the stuff sticks around.
Yeah, I feel like pitchers, there's just, is, a breaking. With hitters, I feel like they continually decline in value once they get to their prime. There's, a year-to-year drop-off where they just get a little bit slower. There's no,
except
huge
for the top
drop-off.
End. Except for, the Scherzers. Sure. And
I feel like with arms, though, it's they just go until they have, an arm injury, and then there's, a significant issue, with their performance going forward.
And I think a lot of people were he's throwing hard.
But I think
he's
the most
95,
spin so. Rate.
The biggest point you made was just the fact that, he actually hasn't been that good as a pro in his career. He's had
good
seasons.
You know,
he's had one good season. He's had a couple good, and good, I would put maybe in quotes, half seasons. But it's not like it's like Kerry Wood, level of player where you're wow, dude, if he could just stay healthy for 200 innings, he's going to strike out 270 guys. I don't even think that's what he is by any stretch of the imagination. He's a, a number three if he stays healthy. And I, would bet very strongly against him staying healthy. So I am a bit concerned that, everyone is just assuming that there's this, top of rotation guy who we just happened to sign when he was hurt last year, and he's going to rehab just fine and be a top of the rotation ish type guy. But I will be very surprised, and I'll probably have many burrito bets on Garrett Richards' performance this year because I'm not someone who thinks that he's going to be healthy. That's number one I would bet against. Two, that he'll be good. I would actually bet that he won't be good, even if healthy. And
what else is there?
Well, to your point, he might come back healthy and he might be good for a 33-year-old pitcher, but will he actually be good?
Mm-hmm. Good for
another
a playoff
thing.
Team.
Right.
He'll be 32 in May.
32 in May. Okay. So, I mean, that's not super old, but it's also past the territory where, it's not like it's a person getting Tommy John when they're 20 in the minor league system and having.
It's no Paddock.
Yeah, it's not Paddock. It's not even Anderson Espinosa level.
Oh,
yeah. So,
I remember when he signed, like, the weirdest thing, I'm not sure if we talked about it, but, like, the weirdest thing about that contract is that they only got him for 2 years. Like, if you're going to sign a pitcher who just got Tommy John and that you're banking on him coming back and being healthy and, like, returning to, like, potentially Cy Young form, why wouldn't you get him for 3 or 4 years?
Put a club option on the third year.
Exactly. Like, I mean, you're basically... I mean, the reason why we say it's a $15 million deal is because you're banking entirely on this year. That's the only thing we're getting from him. Like, and if he's really good this year, then, like, we're gone after this. Like, we get nothing more. It's a very strange contract.
Well, I mean, we talked about that, right? I mean, you're assuming the risk. You're paying 50, like, let's put this in a comparison aspect, right? So we're all in agreement, right? It's a $15 million, arguably a little higher than $15 million contract, right?
For well, it's 1 year. Actually 15.5, isn't it?
Yeah.
For like for basically what will amount to a single year's worth of...
Mm-hmm. Correct. So let's look at what you could get on the market for that. Would you take Garrett Richards over Cole Hamels, who signed a 1 year contract for 18 mil?
No, I'd much rather have Cole Hamels.
I also would much rather have Cole Hamels.
I mean, I'd rather have neither, to be honest.
Me too. I would actually rather spend that 15 million. I would rather spend that money in other ways.
Yeah.
Certainly.
But I would rather have
Hamels. Given the alternatives, if they're going to sign a short-term pitcher for a one-year sort of thing, would you rather have it be the guy who has to rehab through Tommy John, who also has a long injury history and maybe one good season of statistical performance in his career? Or would you rather have the guy who's, you know, pitched deep into postseason runs and been a pretty serviceable pitcher for his entire career, who also happens to be from here? Granted, that's a small reason really? To sign for someone. Yeah. Rancho Bernardo.
Here, yeah.
Yeah.
The worst reason to sign someone.
It is the worst reason to sign someone, but it's still, nonetheless, at least it gives you, it gives you a plausible reason to believe you could have signed him at least, right? It's not like he's like, no, I want to be closer to family. I'm signing in Atlanta or whatever.
The Strasburg argument.
But the whole, the biggest thing with the Garrett Richards thing to me is the assumption that, okay, he could be a top-of-the-rotation arm if he's healthy. So we're not going to acquire another top-of-the-rotation arm. I think with Cole Hamels, you know that he's not a top-of-the-rotation arm anymore. So you're still going to look for that. And the Padres now, it's almost it's not the end of the offseason. We've obviously seen big moves made by the Padres in January and February in recent years. But it's getting close to the end of the offseason, and they have not acquired a top-of-the-rotation arm.
All the free agent options are gone.
And everyone before the offseason said one of their biggest things was top-of-the-rotation arm.
Well, so let's talk about that. So you led off the episode by saying, you know, not much has happened, right?
Not much has happened.
Do you believe that AJ is banking, assuming that Garrett Richards is the top of the rotation option, and that thus there is no reason for him to sign something? Ignore all of the talk, like none of that is ever real. It's planted. It's purposefully let out. For whatever reason.
Yeah, you know, after Strasburg got signed, the reporters started to feed out the front office is very confident in the rotation, and it's really the bats that they need
to
improve, which is definitely to improve the bats still, but...
You can't possibly be confident in the rotation once you factor in... Unless you believe that Garrett Richards is going to throw 180 high-quality innings, right? Isn't he the backbone of that rotation at that point?
No.
I mean, we all assume, right, Chris Paddock is going to be excellent. We're assuming, Lamette is going to be very good.
Mm-hmm. And there are health issues with all these guys, by the way.
They're all 1 year removed from Tommy John.
No, for real. There's, like, some serious health issues with most of the arms we're discussing.
Like, imagine they all get wiped out. Like, if we end up with, like, Davies being our best starter of the year. And, like, Davies, Lucchese.
I mean, I think Mackenzie Gore has...
They rush up Gore because, like, you know, Paddock...
Well, this is actually similar to the butterfly effect, right? If Richards gets hurt.
I actually want to do a 1-2-3, and then we're all going to name someone. Last year, I had a burrito bet with Menzrea before the season on who would lead the Padres starting pitchers in war, and I had Chris Paddock. And this was in June of the prior year before he had even had a cup of tea, which begs the question, is Mackenzie Gore the most likely to lead the Padres in starting pitching war this year? So I want to do a 1-2-3. We're all going to name someone in the rotation that the Padres currently have that you think is going to lead Padres starting pitchers in, let's say, baseball reference pitching war this next season. All right? So
wait, are we doing it on three
We'll do 3-2-1 and then go. I'll give you a second here to think of a name. All right, ready? Three.
You need to share it with Corey.
Okay.
3-2-1.
Gore. Paddock.
Lamette.
Paddock. Okay, so we have two Paddock, a Gore, and a Lamette.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting.
How many innings do you think Gore's going to get?
I think he's going to start the year with the team. Like, I mean, either that or it'll be like a late April sort of thing for control reasons.
Like, that's like the maximum then, right?
But
I think it just depends on how well he's pitching and like how competitive the Padres are. I mean, if the Padres aren't competitive, then I think they'll be much more conservative with its innings. But
if they are competitive, they'll just do what they did with Paddock and send him down to AA for 2 weeks.
I don't know if I would say the Padres were really competitive when they did that last year.
It was the beginning of the season, or like when the dream was still alive. Yeah,
the dream of maybe the second wild card.
Maybe dumb though. Even at that point,
yeah, the dream of maybe the second wild card. But it wasn't like
it's not like they were a game out.
Yeah, they were like
six games out. Yeah, in the wild card, six games out is like a world of distance.
Yeah,
but still, I mean, there's no there's no way in my mind they push Gore to like 180, 200 this year. That would just, I'd be very upset if they did. That's just incredibly irresponsible. Like, there's no reason to do that.
I don't remember last
season. I mean, if he's the best pitcher on your team and you're a good team, I don't, like, when else are you going to do it? Like, I don't know.
Next
I guess
year?
I guess the year after that,
when he has all the innings built up, when this future Cy Young winner isn't at risk of like blowing out his arm as a young man.
Sure, I would say that for me though, I'm much more of the school of thought that like these guys just like have a finite amount of innings they can pitch, and if you throw them 150 in a year or 250, it doesn't make much difference long term. I don't think, except for the fact that you've taken 100 of those bullets away from him because he's thrown 100 extra innings that. You know, he could have gotten injured during. So, to me, I don't, and I think actually the evidence on it is pretty scant that if you actually super limit innings, that long term there's like major health benefits to the pitcher.
Well, there's no evidence for anything with arms.
There is for like number of pitches they throw in a game, and like stuff like that. So how much you exert them in a matter of like a game. But if you're putting like a 90 pitch limit on him every time out, and he's throwing six innings. Like, I don't see a major reason to – if they're competitive. If they're not competitive, by all means, conserve his arm. But if they're competitive, I don't see a reason he can't throw 200 innings next year, except for the fact that pitchers aren't really throwing 200 innings much anymore. There were, like, six guys that did that last year, some ridiculously low number of pitchers that threw 200 innings. But I don't feel like there should be much of a limit if they're competitive, and he's their best pitcher. There's a lot of factors at play here. Will he actually be their best pitcher? Mm-hmm. Like, will he come up and struggle? He certainly could. But if he comes up and he's good, I think the Padres will be probably pretty good. And so there'll be reason to continue to pitch him. And so that's why I pick him. I also just have concerns with Lamet and Paddock. Like, Paddock was great last year, but the home run rate is definitely something to look at.
Mm-hmm. And at the latter half of the year, he started to get beat up somewhat frequently, too.
And it seemed like, you know, all the good teams had him mostly figured out. He gave up a lot of home runs, and those are
that Yankees game.
I don't know. You just don't
tough to watch.
I mean, some pitchers, I guess, start to limit home runs, but I feel like Paddock has actually quite a bit of work to do. Lamet's the most interesting to me. It's just the injuries scare me more than they do Gore. So that's that. But I think Lamet would have been my second.
Well,
his
K rate is like juices his WAR.
Yeah,
I mean, WAR loves that.
Well, it depends which WAR you're looking at. Right, so the Fangraphs one is going to always penalize Paddock a ton. It's super.
That's what fly balls.
Super home run rate heavy. So if he gives
up, doesn't Fangraphs normalize their fly ball rate? So if he's like, if Paddock has, you know, disproportionately more home runs per fly balls, shouldn't Fangraphs benefit him then?
I don't think so. I mean,
isn't that the whole point of FIP?
Home runs don't go into FIP though. I mean, home runs. Are taken out of FIP, right?
Oh, so Chad got pwned.
No. Like, it's fielder's independent pitching. So
this
when
is
you give
the Ben and Woods,
when you give
a, no, sabermetrics,
fielder's independent
here.
Pitching. So when you give up a home run, obviously there's nothing your fielders could have done. Sure, Renfro might have robbed the home run and he's not here anymore. But
Fangraphs, they normalize fly balls somehow.
They do. They certainly do. And there's like, it's a pretty complicated formula. Yeah. But all I know is that if you give up a bunch of home runs, your Fangraphs. WAR is going to be super low for a pitcher, even if some of those home runs are fluky. And home run rate does fluke between year and year. And so you'll look at a pitcher who just had like three more home runs go out that year, and his Fangraphs F-WAR will be like a full win worse than it was the previous year, just based on a couple fluky fly balls getting out, which is why I went with Baseball Reference for our. It's not even a bet. We didn't really bet on anything. But yeah, so I guess. it's interesting that we all have different answers. I think that's what I was kind of hoping for. Because what it really means is that we don't really have a top of rotation guy. We're all kind of like gambling on one of these guys. We have a lot of good candidates for it.
And the upside is great, really. Like if Paddock, Lamette, Gore, and sure, Richards too, if like they...
Even Lucchese too.
It's not going to happen. Hey, Lucchese can improve by a win or two, probably. Yeah. Like, this could be a really good rotation next year, but that's like the 97th percentile outcome.
I don't see Lucchese improving by a win. I think that's pretty optimistic, but
no, I think
he doesn't need to. Like, he's a two-war starter.
He's a
two-war,
five-war
starter is great.
I also think
that's fine for even a championship-level team.
He's a very good four.
Yeah. I think it'll be a bit easier for him, too, because I don't think he'll go deeper into games. So his rate stats will look much better, even though it's not like... He might be just as good in the first time through the order this year as he was last year, and second time through the order, the same thing. But the fact is, I think this year he won't go through the order the third time quite as much, because other starting pitchers will probably pitch deeper into games than our pitchers did last year, so there'll just be more bullpen help for him, and I think more of that's just well-known. Mm-hmm. So my expectation is that just as an artifact of the team around him, he'll have a better year.
Yeah, should we talk about the bullpen? Like, it should actually be quite good, right?
I don't like predicting bullpen.
Sure.
Is Yates going to be as good this year? The odds
are probably not.
Are we really gambling?
Though?
I mean, Corey and I talked about this quite a bit, but we're gambling quite a bit on Pomeranz's, 20 innings as a bullpen pitcher at the end of last year. That's like... Do you know how many relievers we've had that threw 20 good relief pitcher innings at the end of a season?
Yeah,
in the past,
you have to think that.
Just think of those
with like the TrackMan data that there's something else that is highly predictable that they see. I mean, like him touching 97 when he hasn't done that before in his starts is probably like the indicator that made the Padres drool all over him, right? And that's a pretty good indicator.
Sure, but 97 is like an average late-inning relief pitcher now.
Not from a lefty. And not from a lefty with his stuff.
I mean, I don't know. Some of the top relievers in the game right now are lefty.
Well, yeah, and that's
hard
what
throwers.
We're hoping he'll be.
I don't know. I don't think he's going to implode to like 5-war terrible like he was the other 100 innings he threw last year, but I think probably the reality is somewhere between his outstanding 20 innings and his normal performance, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still good, probably. Okay to good.
Right.
I think we could question whether he should be one of the highest paid players on the team on a 4-year contract. But if we're only looking at 2020, like, he'll be okay to good, right?
Yeah. But, I mean...
I think Yates will probably be very good again, right?
Munoz...
We hope, yeah.
We have to do this thing with every bullpen.
But that's why the bullpen is so... I think that we're like, oh, they're going to be this lockdown bullpen, and we only need to pitch 5 innings because then the bullpen's going to come in. But it's so difficult to predict that. Like, I heard the same thing last year. The talk last year was
Castillo got hurt.
Stuff happens.
Munoz came up and it got so much better.
Yes. Stuff happens.
But, I mean, that's what you have to do when you're constructing a bullpen.
Stuff
is just have
happens,
a bunch
though.
Of your, the top, a couple of them are going to bust out, but you have to bring in the ones that actually, can break out. And, Munoz is the obvious candidate, and Yates might repeat his performance. And Castillo, if he's healthy, can be one of the best relievers in baseball. And Palm might be the real deal. And Strom might come back to,
I just think even that Castillo statement is difficult to support. Like, we don't know. How much does he pitch?
Fantastic.
He pitched 1 year. Then he was out for a full year. Like, it's impossible for us to say, like, he's going to be one of the best in baseball. Like, relievers...
Well, it's impossible to say that with
very
anybody.
Very often
but he was
relievers
a badass.
Look like the best in baseball, and then the next year they're gone. Like, relievers' lifespan is
Well, I know, but that's what I'm saying. You have to have all these bullets.
And it's good. Yeah. I agree.
And
it's
young
great.
Bullets.
Yeah. They have more depth this year, for sure.
Definitely.
My fear is that... We talked about Garrett Richards, that there will be this kind of butterfly effect if he goes down after 10 starts. Because you lose Garrett Richards, then what? Do you elevate Strom back into the rotation?
No.
Do we pull
they're
Cal,
not gonna, I don't think
do we pull
do
Cal
that
Quantrill
again.
Out of long relief into the rotation?
Yeah.
Like there's this
yeah, that's,
butterfly
that's the first thing that you do. You put Cal.
Sure.
Yeah.
And there's this butterfly effect that happens when you do that.
Right.
Because now you have Cal Quantrill throwing 5 inning starts, which then taxes the bullpen more. And like I see this
Seriously?
Wait, what did he have?
8 2/3 innings. Only Richards. 8 2/3.
Richards, yeah, he had
three. Well, three starts.
8 2/3 inning. He was worth negative
3 games, right? Negative, 3 starts.
No, I think that's okay.
Yeah,
he was worth negative -0.3.
That's right. Because he had one where he was like in for an inning and a half against the Brewers or something.
Yeah, didn't he get like lit up like in the first inning or something like that, and then he was totally
two
fine.
Two of
like,
the games
or
did
something
he
like
get
that.
Lit up?
Yes,
I thought he had like a
the last game was his worst one, if I recall. Mm-hmm.
I think
it's just horrendous.
First one was the
his
best
first
one, and then they're like, "Oh, the spin rate."
But
back.
His first one wasn't great, still, if I recall.
Well, no, the first five innings or four innings were good, and then he gave up three in the fifth, and then yeah, he was out.
Yeah, and I get it. Like he's been, he's barely pitched the last, let's see, 16, 17,
like
18, 19,
years,
4 years.
Seriously?
I mean, his last full season was 2015.
Corey, can you confirm?
So his last game
in 18, he threw like
get off the MLB stats website.
Okay,
crap.
Well, no, I'm just saying like so he had the three starts. Okay, the first one was at Milwaukee. He went 3 2/3, gave up 3 earned runs, 5 hits, struck out 5 guys. Second start, he went an inning and 2/3. That's the one he got lit up. He got 4 hits, 4 earned runs. Home run, a couple walks. That was not good. And then his last one was against Arizona, and that was 3 1/3. Gave up a hit and an earned run, which was a solo shot. Walked 4. Struck out 4. Yeah, so that's all he
and
did.
And I guess you could say, like, he's been out for 4 years, so maybe
yeah,
his
in the past
takes some time. But, yeah. Like, do we know it's coming back? Sometimes it doesn't come back.
Yeah, in the past 4 years, he's thrown 34 innings, 27 innings, 76 innings, 8 innings. And the year where he was healthy before then, he wasn't even that great. He struck out less than 8 guys per 9 innings. He was worth 2.8 wins above replacement, which is pretty good, but it's not good.
That's
it's like,
Kyle Davies.
Yeah, it's like, you know, run-of-the-mill, you know, on a really competitive team trying to win the World Series, that's a fourth starter. That's your Kenta Maeda of the Padres,
and that's
essentially.
Your best case. That's 28-year-old Garrett Richards.
Yeah.
I like how we got back to shitting on Garrett Richards.
Well, but we were talking about the butterfly effect of it. It's like,
yeah.
It's like not, it's not even like if he gets hurt. It's like there's just a really low chance that he's healthy and good.
Yeah.
And so then what happens? Like if you don't go out and acquire another arm who's a potential top of the rotation arm, then you really are banking on
Gore coming up.
Being great.
What
or
is
Patino?
The rotation as it stands, not including Gore? It's Paddock, Lamette, Richards,
Davies,
Lucchese.
That's what I imagine it's going to be.
Yeah. And then Quantrill is long relief in the bullpen, which he should be pretty good at, actually. I thought Quantrill was going to get traded by now. Probably might.
I still wouldn't be surprised if one of the Quantrill, Strom, Lucchese, like back of the rotation type options gets traded.
Yeah.
I was saying it on the podcast last time that Lucchese probably has a lot of trade value.
Yeah, sure.
He's the type of guy you could package with a Will Myers, as opposed to trading prospects who have potential value for you long term. Trade someone who is kind of like peripherally on your roster, like a Lucchese, who has positive value as a means to, you know, absorb some of that contract that you have to obviously absorb with Will Myers. I think that's a proposal I put out there last podcast, and I still think it makes a lot of sense. You know, as we talk through it, obviously, then you lose.
There is a starting pitcher glut. I mean, not quite yet, but next year, if things don't go horrifically,
There's a glut of guys who you can kind of squint and be like, yeah, that guy could have a good year, but none of them are really great bet. Like Paddock's probably the only reasonable bet to have
good
year.
There's also then like Morejon and Baez, and then, I mean, Patino eventually.
Yeah, I agree that Morejon and Baez exist.
They do exist.
They exist.
They are literally breathing.
They're there
for now.
It's a big jump.
I don't
to
know.
To say that they'll be fine starters. Like
no. But they have.
There's
trade
a reason
value.
The Padres like deliberately. Like I don't know if you listened. I don't know what it was on, but one of the prospect writers, I think it was Kyle Glazer, was just astonished at the way that the Padres handled Morejon last year. The way that they aggressively
the
promoted
beer,
him
Corey,
as a reliever.
That's what you want?
Yeah, I'd like
the
citrus
in,
please.
They basically converted him into a short inning. Yeah, it's the THC.
Shocker.
Yeah, shocker. hey, when in Rome here in San Leo. he was actually very taken aback at the way that they handled, you know, what he saw as a premium arm. where he already wasn't going deep into games as a starter, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been very limited on innings. He's injury prone.
Well, isn't the reason why they made him the
possibly,
the
but now there's just this assumption that, oh, they're just going to flip a switch and make him a starter again. Mm-hmm. And part of me wonders if that ship has sailed with the team. Mm. I mean,
isn't that what...
A lot of luster with the prospect evaluators seems to be off of Morihone as well.
Yeah, and I mean, that's probably the injury,
what, you know.
But, I mean, isn't this what good teams are supposed to do, is you bring up your young, talented arms that aren't quite there yet, give them the cup of tea, make them the opener, make them some
long
relief. But
we never
use
the opener.
Well, except now we have, like, an actually decent option for it. And, like, it fits...
We've always had decent options.
Well... We've had decent options for it, but those options could have pitched more, and we need those innings. Right now, we don't really need those extra innings, but we do need a couple short opener, high-quality innings, and that's what Morihone could provide last year, and we didn't want to have him do more because of the injury. Isn't that the... I mean, and that's what good teams do when you have a rotation that's solid, that doesn't have room for a guy that, you know, 5 years ago, we would have had Morihone throwing 150 innings if he could have. But now we don't need him to.
So they were forced into a good idea.
Yeah.
Him open, which we don't seem to take advantage of.
Right.
And but just because of his limits, they had to do that with him.
It's like
them.
The Dodgers did that with Julio Urias. Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I think so.
I don't know. I think I've kind of converted over to just seeing them as relievers. Like, I'm okay with them as relievers, both of them, Baez and Morihone.
Why?
I think Baez was okay in the bullpen, and I think there's some question whether they're starters. Like, I don't think it's...
I mean, Morihone is 20.
Is he still 20? He's 21 now? Or?
I mean, oh, yeah, true. I mean, 20, 21,
sure,
but
young.
Still, it's
he's
crazy.
Young, but, like...
So we're driving down his trade value
point, like,
is what
yeah,
we're doing.
Yeah, you're just accepting that he's going to be worth a fifth or a tenth of what he could have been?
I mean, you could say that about any reliever. Like, we could be like, "Well, Munoz throws 100. Are we limiting his value by putting him in the bullpen?"
But there's no way Munoz can start. But Morihone definitely
has never
can start.
Proven that he can carry the load of a starter. And the team has.
But
look,
he's developed.
If you have a premium talent in the minor leagues, when do they convert them into relievers at the minor league level?
Which when they have a lot of injuries.
The Padres greatly limited him at the minor league level before aggressively and promoting him up to the major league
Chad,
level.
Do you want some apple juice or grape juice? Can I get you something here?
Some water?
Okay, cool.
Well, I mean, I don't understand. Like, with the injuries and everything, I feel like this makes a decent amount of sense.
I don't think it's that easy to just flip between reliever and starter for an injury-prone arm. I kind of think, and this is what Kyle Glazer said, it's strange that if you believe in him as a starter that they would treat him the way he did, both at the minor league level and at the major league level.
What would Glazer have preferred they do?
Leaving him in the minors.
And just, like, try to extend
develop,
him there?
Working on him. Mm. He's only 20, like you said. Like, there's plenty of time to build him into a starter if you believe he's going to be a starter.
Were they trying to trade him? Is that what was going on there? Is that why they brought him up?
We on Padres' Twitter said they were, but I don't think there's been actual reported rumors.
No, I'm just wondering, like, is that... Maybe the thought process there
is that how
it wasn't
you do
like
it?
We were.
Like,
it wasn't like we were driving for a wild card at the time when he came up or anything like that. So
don't you want him in the minors, putting up numbers as a starter? Then
look what they did with Luis.
Wait, they're terrible at handling.
Yeah, they
stuff.
Just.
So
they just.
I don't know why we have
trade
faith.
Value.
I mean, Kyle Glazer
gave him away at his lowest.
I mean, Kyle Glazer
lowest value so
didn't have any faith that
do.
They were treating him correct. Like that this was the best path for him. I mean, I think it's fair to question that, For me, I'm kind of one of the, I'm a read the writing on the wall guy. And you look at the way they handled him, and I think they think he's a reliever. John Conniff will explode because John Conniff thinks Adrian Morihone is a number one starter. But I just look at how they treat him and wonder, if you really think he's a number one starter, do you convert him to a reliever the way they did and then park him in the major leagues instead of develop him the rest of the season?
Yeah, there's a difference between, like, what the Rays did with David Price, where they're independent runs, so they call up a top prospect and have him be a reliever.
And to get
just
high
to
leverage
him,
innings,
just
which
to,
has value.
Exactly. Just to kind
value.
Of like, all right, this guy's great. I don't know if he can be a major league starter yet. We're going to put him in the bullpen for now, and he'll be an asset while we're competing. And calling someone up in a lost season where it doesn't fucking matter, where they could use him as a starting pitcher. There was nothing stopping
right.
the Padres from starting Morihone last year.
How many bullpen games did we have?
Yeah. And still having him be just a bullpen guy. I feel like those are very different things. So I've heard people on Potter's Twitter use the David Price and use the other. There's a bunch of examples of top arms coming up and being a reliever at first. But a lot of those examples are guys who came up on good teams and were relievers first and then converted to back to starting pitcher.
But I feel like it doesn't really matter for the arm if they're brought up on a good team or not. It only indicates what the front office thinks of them, I suppose.
What I'm getting at is, to Jagow's point of the writing on the wall, they seem to be treating him like a relief pitcher, not a starting pitcher.
Mm. I thought we were all on the idea of a super bullpen. So, like, that's partly why I'm okay with trying to develop him as an elite bullpen arm. I mean, your two best prospects are starting pitchers, right? And we're all counting on Patino and Gore hitting at the major league level as star-level starters. So I don't see a need for Morejon and Baez to be starters at this point. If you can make them into... And they're not there yet. I mean, they're not elite relievers. But if you think that there's a chance that they'll be one, then fine. Develop them that way. Like, at least get some value out of them. Because if you look at Morejon and the number of innings he's put up as a starter, it's troubling. He doesn't go deep into games. He's not a number one starter. Like, when you look at his actual performance.
He's not a starter at all.
He's young, right? But they chose not to develop him that way at a young age when there's plenty of time to continue to develop him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
he had a lot of injuries.
He also had shoulder problems, is what I just said off the mic.
Which makes me wonder if that's partly why they're converting him.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, but if we can get, like, if, you know, Morejon and Baez can come out and give three good innings every time they have an appearance,
I'm fine with one good inning.
Huge. I mean,
One inning's fine.
But there's no reason to, you know,
and, like,
squander.
You talked about the opener, but they, like...
He did start one of those weird bullpen games, though, last year. Like, one or two of them, I think. He did actually start them, technically.
Yeah, and that's when Quantrill also had his great game.
But they weren't, like, real... Because he didn't throw many innings. He threw maybe, like, 10 innings or something.
He threw 1.1.
Like, total at the major league level last year.
Yeah.
So...
A lot of time between those innings, also.
Yeah.
He wasn't, like, first out of the bullpen.
Yeah. But I think guys like Morejon, Baez, guys who maybe they are or they could be starters, like I think that's more reason to look at packaging a Lucchese or Quantrill with a Myers as opposed to, and we should probably just segue maybe into Will Myers because that's, I think, the biggest, as opposed, well, getting a top of the rotation arm was probably the biggest topic on Potter's Twitter this offseason, but I think getting rid of Will Myers or what do you do with that was one of the other big ones, and I think having guys like Morejon, obviously we have Gore and Patino, but having other options that are potential guys who could have a huge improvement year, who are, you know, young 20s that could take the place of a Quantrill or Lucchese back of the rotation, I think that just gives more reason why that, to me, is the preferred route for getting rid of Will Myers. I know before the podcast started, Jagoff, you talked about you're all fully on board with packaging prospects to get rid of that money.
Right. And you guys talked about it last episode, I think, some. And if I recall, you guys are more on the side of having him recover value and hold on to him.
See, I look at him as, like, not a totally useless player. I feel like the way they've...
He's not. He's not Eric Hosmer.
I feel like the way they've...
nice. Yeah.
I would argue against that also. But
that
we would bandy the... Will Myers around here. I feel like sometimes we talk about him like he's a zero wins above replacement player
who just earns
money.
Like I said, he's not Eric Hosmer.
He's not, and we force him to play a whole bunch of different
positions.
Eric Hosmer
is below replacement level.
True. Yeah. He's got some work to do.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a guy who...
Good thing he's getting younger. He's likely to get better.
Good thing we're just going to ship off Naylor for no godforsaken reason.
I mean, Myers was in an All-Star game and Home Run Derby.
Because
partially, but it wasn't like, obviously he got the start in that game because of it as a designated hitter because of the fact it was in San Diego. But it wasn't like the most egregious starting position player in an All-Star game in any, even in the past like year, you know? So he does have that ability. He's still pretty young-ish. It's not like he's like in his late 30s or mid-30s
he's
even.
He's almost 30, I think.
He's almost 30, yeah. And so to me, I look at him and I say, if you're trading him away and you're eating salary to do it, you're probably getting negative value on the trade.
I'm not in favor of eating salary. I think they should eat no salary.
Well, if you're eating asset value, however you're eating value, you're probably getting negative return on that. Whereas, you know, if you're trading a Lucchese who... I think we all agree has positive value relative to what he's going to earn.
But Will's not a starter.
Yeah, and how can you justify giving him playing time for a team that wants to be competitive? Like, he has talent, and he's shown he can do it, but you have no clue what kind of Will we're going to get on any day. You don't know how long, last season, how long he's just going to be totally crap for.
It's impossible to say, the important part of it, the idea of it is what do you get back, right? So the whole point of clearing the salary, and this is an assumption, which I think the team has bought enough of our faith to believe it, but I'm not advocating that they dump the salary to improve their profit margins in the next year. Like, the assumption is that they're going to productively invest it back into the team, right? And it should be noted that those years are the most critical years of the franchise, that the $20 million Will Myers years.
What a horrible contract, too.
So it didn't make sense at the time. It doesn't make sense now. But, we have it, right? So now what do we do?
Yeah.
So the question is, yeah, we can sit here like we've done every offseason and been like, well, if Will Myers figures it out, I think he could be a 3 or 4 war player. He's got the talent. Have you seen how athletic he is? We could say that again.
He doesn't use batting gloves.
For the fifth year in a row, right?
Well, no, because he started the All-Star game in, 2016?
Yep. The fourth year in a row we're doing it then. So we could do that, sure. And sure, there's some percent chance that he could be, a 2 war player? What do we really think his ceiling is at this point? You're going to say 4 because he's got all this athletic talent.
His ceiling is MVP level.
Well,
is it all clicks?
I don't think that's his ceiling anymore.
Just, why not?
MVPs tend to be good defensively also, and he's just I don't think there's anywhere he's going to be good defensively.
With Will, he has elite sprint speed. If he's not who knows, baked while doing outfield shagging, maybe it could work.
I agree that
talking about the ceiling,
sprint speed might be loosely related to defensive value, but I'm not going to we're not putting sprinters in the outfield just to shag some balls. That's not how it really...
What would have made more of an impact on the 2020 team? Keeping Will Myers or signing Cole Hamels as a fourth starter?
I think keeping Will Myers is...
I think signing... Really? Cole Hamels is a 2.5
starter. I think part of this depends on how much you actually believe in the Grisham-type guys that they acquired.
They traded one of their top prospects for him, so you'd assume that they believe in him.
Not according to the Padres. The Padres just traded a ho-hum second baseman who can't hit shit. Well, that's the way they view it.
Corey's steaming mad right now.
Well, I mean, that's the way that they, in my...
How they treat him.
Yeah. So, I look at things like, who do I think is a better bet in 2020 in a corner outfield spot, Grisham or Will Myers?
I'd bet on the current top 100 prospect over Will Myers, probably.
I think it's a pretty fair toss-up, to be honest.
Happy birthday,
and
Will.
I don't think either of them are good bets, but I'd much rather have 2 of them than none of them. And I'm not sure how much Cole Hamels really improves this team.
That's not the question, though. Do you want Trent Grisham and Cole Hamels, or do you want Will Myers? For me, I'd rather have Trent Grisham and Cole Hamels.
I'd rather have Trent Grisham and Will Myers. I think I would rather have 2 not great options that both have ceilings that could – one of them could turn into a decent corner outfielder. But going into the season and being like, yep, all of my eggs are in the Grisham basket, and I'm acquiring this back-of-the-rotation old guy, Cole Hamels, who I still prefer over Garrett Richards, don't get me wrong, but – I would still rather have that scenario because I just feel like, I'm not a lot of confidence in Grisham and the other corner outfield options, but also a little bit of, Will Myers has had a good year not that long. His good year was considerably more recent than Garrett Richards. He's actually had some value the past couple of years more than Garrett Richards,
it's very different stories though.
They are.
I was going to say, where does Myers play?
Right field.
The thought is platooning with Grisham.
They're going to put him in right?
Yeah, platooning with Grisham is the plan, right?
Margot and Grisham platoon in center. Grisham and Myers platoon in right.
But he really hasn't... Naylor should start at first base.
Naylor should start at first base.
Why do we want a no-powered, nothing first baseman?
He has
power. We already have one.
He's cheaper?
He's cheaper.
That doesn't matter, but... He's young. He has a better bat right now. He still has plenty of room to grow.
He's a perfect trade candidate to the AL.
He had one good month, and then he didn't hit for power the rest of the season.
He's still a prospect.
At this point, he's not a prospect.
Shut up.
He's not rookie of the year eligible. He's not a prospect anymore. They gave him a lot of time in the major leagues last year.
Sure. And he showed some steps forward.
I mean, they're the ones that chose to promote him straight from Double A up to the majors. Or did he really have El Paso time? that much El Paso time?
He didn't have much, if any. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go on a tangent on the development path of him, but like,
I mean, I think there's plenty.
He had one good. I think his first month he hit for power, some power, not great power, and like, it's not first base power. I don't know if I see it.
Yeah, but neither is Hosmer.
He kind of reminds me of.
And Naylor can still develop.
Right, he's better than Hosmer. Everyone's better than Hosmer. Literally, but Hosmer's not going anywhere. That's the problem.
Hosmer has a no trade. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So there's nowhere for Naylor to play. Is the problem? He can't play the outfield.
He sucks.
I mean,
at
you agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you just watch him warm up. You just watch him warm up. Like, he can't even throw the ball over the ball.
Girl. No, he's a good arm.
His arm is
No, he has a great arm, but he doesn't know where it's going. He throws it into the stands when he's warming up, when he throws back to the ball.
Throws
I'm not kidding. I've watched it. I've seen him do it multiple times in a game.
But look, here's the difference.
He can't hit the ball, girl.
Here's the difference. Like, there's still plenty of time for him to grow. And, like, yes, he still needs to develop at the major league level. And that's where the most development should be taking place.
But he's not. He's not going to.
You don't. You can't say that.
Well, no.
He can be an AL player.
He's not going to get the chance
anymore. Yes, and that's the problem. Agreed.
I think they took a look at him. I mean, they brought in Grisham, right? So they didn't believe in Naylor in the outfield.
Yeah. I mean, I don't believe. No one believes in Naylor.
And you know they're not going to put him at first.
Which is
where he should
the
be.
Problem.
Yeah.
But sure.
There's no place for him in here.
We've got a lot of guys that have batting practice power that can never actually hit for power in the majors. Kyle Blanks had incredible power, but he never hit like a 40 home run guy.
Why can't the Padres admit defeat with Hosmer? Is it Preller not able to own up to the total fuck up of signing him? Is it Fowler not wanting to get rid of like the man in the clubhouse?
Yes.
Like,
I think it's all.
They brought him out for the uniform reveal. There's
nothing they can do.
I mean,
People say no trade, but no trade's not firm. Like, you just pay the guy off.
But how much you got to pay him off right now?
Just $100 million. No one wants him.
Well, no, you just
DFA him.
No, it's not even that. You just treat him like a pile of shit until he wants out of there, and he'll waive his no trade clause.
Yeah,
a no trade clause is not this iron. It's not this iron
ever had.
Same deal. You got to pay.
I wouldn't
give up $100 million in prospects to get rid of him, right?
No, I wouldn't trade Hosmer away. Like, I think you're again selling DFA. Low on someone that you don't need to. Like,
but
what
you
you're not going to get any
Hosmer playing time.
Here's
at
the
first base for a competitive team.
Marver can't admit that he was very pro signing Hosmer.
I wasn't pro signing Hosmer.
No, he can admit that.
We had a fiery podcast when I was in Costa Rica about it, and he was very pro the signing, and I was very anti the signing, and I'm right, and Marver's wrong, just like always.
I had a contingency on this. Wait, you're always right. Tell me about the Brian Mitchell bet we had last year. How many games did he start for the Padres?
That was such a meaningless bet. Comparing the stakes of that to signing Eric Hosmer.
All right, here's the thing though. So let's just go back to the Grisham comparison. You're talking about a guy who last year had a .328 on base percentage in Milwaukee, a place where it's very easy to hit comparatively, and that's you're actually that confident in his ability. That you're saying that he's a better bet this year than Will Myers.
Yeah.
Will Myers'
OBP?
Oh, my God. You can't bet on Will Myers. That's the thing.
But Will Myers wasn't playing for the Brewers in Milwaukee last year. He was playing for the Padres in San Diego.
Does that affect OBP that much?
I think that's part of No, I think part of it is like what sort of scouting you have and what sort of information you're getting to the hitters. I think there is a drop-off with the Padres' level of analytics compared
we're
to others.
Just hopeless.
That is part of it, though. I think.
Okay, well, then we never actually talked about Shogo.
But.
You know, he hits like 300, 370.
No, this is actually very tied into Will Myers. How high do you think salary is going to go this year?
I think it's going to go
last
down.
Year,
I don't think it's going to go up.
By the way, last year, just for comparison's sake, last year Will Myers did have a .321 on-base percentage at Petco, and Grisham was .328 in Milwaukee. So I do think that Will Myers is probably actually barely a better bet than Grisham this year. And I think, neither of them are good bets,
I would rather have two of them than one of them.
Grisham going up and Will going down.
Yeah.
I mean,
the problem is like maybe the expected value of Myers is like marginally higher than Grisham. But like if you look at the distribution of Myers' outcomes, it's like 10% is like 4-5 WAR and 90% is below replacement level and like he's trash.
Like
you don't want that kind of guy
Myers,
starting for a competitive.
Myers has never been below replacement level though. Even last year he was above replacement.
Well, no, he's below replacement level when he's bad. He has the 1 month where he sets the world on fire and that makes him like 0.1 WAR.
And the first
and the
2 weeks
when
of the season.
That's when he bumped up his on-base percentage.
It was also... No, it was also
coincidentally against expanded rosters, and you know.
No, there was also like a good like maybe 2 or 3 weeks in like May where we thought he was back to
just
the Odell
April.
Myers.
No, the first.
No, it was April. The first 3 weeks of
sure,
the
season. Sure. Whenever it was early in the year.
But
where
then
he
what
was,
we always do
between,
though.
But like besides the first and last months of the season, he was worth like -2 WAR. Like,
well, okay, let's
sure,
take
but
a step
you can't
back.
Just ignore
Marver
April
has established
though, you
know? That Grisham and Myers are essentially the same performance level, right?
So, no, I mean, same from
he
like...
He pointed out they have the same OBP, essentially. One makes $20 million, and one makes $550,000.
But they're both...
And so it's impossible to say that just doing an apples-to-apples comparison, okay, we've agreed they're the same, right? The question really is, what could you do with the extra $19.5 million, and would the combination of Grisham, who is equally as good as Myers, plus whatever you could get for $19 million, make the team better? And in my opinion, that question is undoubtedly a yes.
I mean, I think equally good is a really not fair way to phrase it. I would say good bets. I mean, the odds that Grisham is good next year is like 20%, and the odds that Myers is good next year might be like 20%, right?
So they're equal.
So you either have an 80% chance of having neither player. In the scenario where you just keep Grisham, there's an 80% chance you don't have a good corner outfielder. In the scenario where you keep both of them,
there's a 64%
chance that neither of them are good. I would rather keep have two decent corner outfield options who can also, by the way, play first base against left-handed pitchers and probably do a pretty decent job playing first base against left-handed pitchers, especially in comparison to Hosmer and Naylor, who probably shouldn't be playing first base against left-handed pitchers. That's my comparison versus a Cole Hamels who – the comparison for Cole Hamels is like whose innings is he replacing? Lucchese? Is he actually better than Lucchese? I'm not even like sold on that. Is he actually – I mean, he's probably better than Quantrill.
He's better than Grisham.
But the difference there isn't that big. And so you're going to have to pay to get rid of Will Myers.
Well,
or
no, I'm using that as a placeholder. Like,
sure.
We could take it a step further and debate how you would spend $19.5 million.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be a starting pitcher to make the team better. The offense totally sucked last year.
Like, sure. They could, for example, trade Will Myers and Lucchese and a couple prospects and get a better corner outfielder. And I might be on board with that. I just think that you're probably trading Myers and getting negative value on the trade where he still plays a position where you don't really have like a necessarily a good option in right field. I mean, Grisham's an okay prospect with an okay projection.
There's 3 more years of him.
Sure.
Like, you're not just trading this year. I mean, we're looking at it under the lens of how does it affect the 2020 team, but there's 3 years, $60 million of him, and we're now seem to be in somewhat of an agreement that he's about as good as Trent Grisham. So,
sure.
So
who you just gave
opinion,
up Luis Urias for,
and look,
by the way.
They're spending a lot of money this year, and they're clearing some money.
He's shaking his head and grabbing his eyes.
Well, it's not about Luis. I'm just thinking it's about the Will thing, about how they did the contract, that they did the low part when our payroll was just nothing.
So stupid.
Yeah,
so
when they're promising, we're gonna be raising it, and that's when his contract. It was so dumb.
Mike D wanted that press conference so badly.
Yeah.
Oh.
The face of the franchise.
Yeah. I mean, there was no reason to extend him at that time either. Like,
it's
you're
terrible.
How else is Mike D going to invite the cute reporter to his boat if he doesn't have the press conference?
Well,
there's no cute reporters.
Whoa, Chad. Shots fired.
Sorry.
Shots fired. Wow, okay.
Kevin A.C. got the Silver Fox look going on.
He did get a haircut. It looks pretty good now.
Oh, man. Can we talk about the masterpiece we made of the Kev Dog Hedges.
That was a collaborative effort.
Oh my god, that was beautiful.
Carlos R. made some key contributions to that.
Yes.
I was like 2 minutes late, but mine was. I'm sorry, Carlos, but mine was much higher quality than Carlos's.
I don't think so. That's why I don't use it.
What do you do? Have you zoomed in? It's like JPEG to hell.
Who zooms? I just look at it on the phone and scroll past it. It's fine. Get a chuckle and then move past.
It's fine.
That was
beautiful. What do you think this
though?
Is? Like Metropolitan Museum of Art? Like,
yes, this is the we have a
that was
know,
one of the better ones of the of
one
the
of
year.
The best, yeah.
It really was.
It
yeah.
takes
it
a dump
top.
On farm. It's high quality. Oh, it makes fun of AC.
Oh, that was
like, it's got everything.
Yeah, I mean, it really
so,
is.
It's got
edgy. I mean,
AJ looking creepy.
Yeah.
Probably the peak of the off season. All right. Well. Okay.
Look. Clear the money. Like. Pay the prospect cost. I keep hearing like,
how
oh, you know,
don't
we'll
clear
$10
the money.
Million, but like, just pay whatever it costs.
But
what is $60 million of prospects?
But,
like,
and,
but,
and
what
get
are
you going
to use the money for now?
That's the question.
And,
that's the question.
And, you know, it would have been nicer if they took care of this in the beginning of the offseason when there were a lot of choices. But
and it seems like this entire discussion is moot because no one wants Will. And, you know, then we started to get like the feeders from the reporters saying, oh, you know, they're like they feel good about
nobody's training for him for Will. They're training for the prospects. And this is something Marvin and I talked about during the rebuild years that the Padres should be doing. And they tried, right? The Brian Mitchell trade was a try to do this.
No question. This should be a no-brainer trade for like a rebuilding team that has nothing else to do with the money, right? You get some prospects. You get Will Myers, who, again, I mean, as much as you don't like him for this next year, you agree that there's at least a chance that he recovers a lot of that value.
I'm operating under the assumption he's, you know, to the team that's acquiring him, not useful. But yes, they will sell it to their fans as he's got a lot of potential. He's athletic. They can use him. But really,
there's at least a 10% chance though that he ends up being.
I think the kind of team that takes him is like the Marlins, that they want the prospects and they have like, you know, outfield spots that like, sure, give it Will, see if he can, you know, flourish.
You know, it's essentially
wait, really?
It's essentially Chase Headley, though. I mean, there was some belief by, you know, maybe Chase Headley will figure it out and be a productive defensive third baseman, and we can at least get through the year with him, right?
I'm expecting it's going to be like the Oakland A's will be like, oh, yeah, give us Will Myers. And then they're going to be like, well, Will Myers hits great against pitchers that don't have a slider that breaks more than 8 inches or whatever the hell they figure out over there. And he's going to put up like 2.7 WAR in 112 games, and he's going to be worth exactly $20 million, and we'll have given up a bunch of prospects to them.
But that's fine.
And they'll win 92 games.
That's just like the Padres, how we have to operate now because we suck at preparing our major leaguers to be valuable.
But the thing is, you can't be petrified by the fear of what they'll do later. Because the question is, are they going to do that here? Because if they don't do it here, then it doesn't matter, right? So there's a lot of fear. Like, if we trade this prospect, he's going
to... It's like, why are we so shit?
So let's assume they trade him.
We're stuck with it. Let's
assume
there's no fix for it.
Are we? Is that...
Let's just assume they trade him. Let's say they get rid of his salary somehow, and they end up with either dumping prospects or trading Lucchese or Quantrill, however they do it. Then what? Right. So then, assuming we have this money, do we want the Japanese outfielder? Is that someone that we think is a good complement in the corner outfield / center field position?
You know, I got
it's not
going to
be nothing because I heard he's demanding a three-year contract.
I'm assuming something like $12 million a year for this guy for like a 2 to 3 year sort of contract.
But I mean, people are like he slashes 300, 370, 430 in Japan. People are just like, I mean, sure, like on base skills are universal, sure, but people are just assuming for the Padres that like he'll be able to do something like that here.
Yeah,
like,
I look at his slash there. I look at comparative slashes, and I'm thinking like something like 280, 340, 430 as his slash line here. How much do we want to pay for that? 340 on base percentage, corner outfield.
I'd pay 12.
I'd rather keep. But
above average defensively, he can run the bases
a little bit. Only in the corners, not in center.
Only in the corners. I'm assuming he's going to be a corner outfielder here, not a center fielder. Seems to be the assumption, at least, that...
It seemed like local media was saying he'd be a partner with Margot in center.
That's because the local media thinks... Shit. Well, here's the thing. The Padres will play anyone in center field.
We
should learn this. Yeah. Center field.
They signed Manny Machado, and they're like, well, he's also a center fielder.
They're going to play Tatis in center field. Come on.
That better not happen, by the way. We didn't even touch on Lindor or any of those rumors.
It was all fake.
It's all fake.
It's not.
I don't know if it's
over.
Fake. I feel like some of it's tire kicking.
You know why can't Lindor play second, or why can't Tatis play second and like let Lindor mentor him, and then they're not going to sign Lindor to a Machado contract, and then Tatis is going to be the superstar.
How much faith do you put in Dave and Jeff? Their quote unquote sources.
Oh, I don't listen to their crap.
So I know that last week they said that their source. They called it a verified source, said that Tatis was pissed that the team is even discussing moving him because he is a shortstop.
That sounds like
and honestly, as a player that's trying to maximize value, you would want to be a shortstop, right? Yeah. I mean, that's actually the core
of
a lot
Lindor
of his
war
value.
But Lindor is the best defensive shortstop
course,
in the game.
Of course. But do you think Tatis thinks he isn't?
He's better than Tatis. I mean,
do you think Tatis thinks that, though? Because he seems to me to be supremely confident in his skills, as he should be.
But come on, like,
I get it from a team.
If
concept.
We get Lindor, like, come on, dude, like,
well, I'll tell that to Dave Pellet.
This depends on the Padres, basically. I'm on like how they approach this. There's an easy way to approach this, and you just go down to the DR and you sit down with him and go, look, this is what is something that we're kicking around right now, and obviously, this guy is a superstar shortstop defensively. We know that you're going to be that guy as well. You are already. But would you even consider this? Is this something that you would even do? And if he says no, then you go, okay, cool, we're good. All right, that's the end of it.
And maybe they did.
Yeah, right. Maybe they did. But I don't believe this thing that they just floated it out into the ether and just and were just like, okay, well, let's see what happens. And then he's in the Dominican, gets completely pissed off, and is like, you know, going, oh, I can't fucking believe this, blah, 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 blah. I'm a shortstop. If they did that, which is very, very possible because it's the Padres, that's really bad on their side because it's an easy way to do this. Did they screw it up? I can't believe that. I just can't believe that they would eat the one guy that you the one guy you don't want to get pissed off is him.
For what it's
you,
worth,
you say that, but then look how they just treated Urias.
No. I'm saying it's very, very possible because it's the Padres.
And Will,
however,
yeah.
But they didn't like Luis. They love Fernando. I mean, they know that's the guy.
Sure.
I mean, we love Manny, but Fernando's the guy.
I think it's
and
probably
they know that.
It's probably most likely just kicking the tires and see how much Lindor costs.
Story. It seems to me he's having the greatest time of anyone in the entire world.
Literally the best offseason in the history of baseball. No, nobody's ever had an offseason like that kid is having. And he just got a Bentley yesterday or 2 days ago for Christmas or what? Yeah.
But I think if you're the Padres and you see the Dodgers potentially acquiring Lindor, you at least have to figure. All right, let me ask.
Right, yeah.
See how expensive
he
is.
Why wouldn't you?
At the very worst case scenario, if he's super cheap or, like, relatively cheap, we can even throw Lindor in center field and not piss off Tatis.
And,
you know,
and,
like,
and especially when you see the way the Indians are getting fucked on
but you
got to
at least,
the trades.
I feel like you have to be in all those conversations. So at the very least, you can plan on, okay, if the Dodgers do acquire him, what have they given up?
Yeah.
What, right. You know, what would be the next step, right? So having that conversation to me is not an issue.
No.
Especially if they approach it. Sensibly, like
sensibly,
you,
and yeah. go. Hey, you know, is this something that you would even be into? And if not, okay, fine. You know, then we'll let it die. That's fine. But they're not going to let it get to the point where he's angry and pissed off at. Especially when you want to sign the guy to a long term deal at some point.
Well, I think they do, but I think it usually gets reported like, do the Padres have the will to sign him to an extension? I my guess is that the holdup is Fernando.
Like, oh, I'm sure it is.
He's looking at arguably the biggest contract in history when he hits free agency, and
right.
maybe he doesn't want it. He doesn't need the money. He's just got a Bentley.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, he has all the. He really, and people are well, you know, just sign him to an Acuna deal. No, this is a much different situation.
From that, yeah,
everybody learned from that
disaster.
Yeah, so he's not going to do that. Yeah,
yeah.
But you want to be in the guy's good graces, and you're not going to float the center field thing out and about without talking to him first. If they did, then they're. Morons, but they've done that a million times.
So on the what would you do with the Will Myers front, we talked about the Japanese outfielder a little bit, maybe not quite enough. Are you guys on board with signing him? Like, do you think that would be a sensible signing?
I mean, it depends, right?
So if you do that, like, let's look at the
let's just say they sign him to a 3-year deal for $36 million.
If they sign him to $36 million, you know he's starting every game, right?
Is he though?
Almost.
Probably. He's gonna play at least 100 games as a starter.
I think if you sign him to that contract, they're expecting him to be a full-time starter,
okay.
knowing the Padres. So that moves Grisham into what, a center field platoon?
That's so
with
frustrating.
Margot.
Why are they like this?
Which maybe makes sense. I mean, it was small sample last year, but Margot did hit lefties much, 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 much better than righties.
And you got to figure Grisham will hit righties better than lefties.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hope, right?
And
we don't know if he can field the position. We don't know if he can field the position, but...
Yeah, fielding the position is not a requirement for center field for us.
Not with the Padres.
Not with the Padres.
So, I mean, that's the fallout, right? You have a Shogo, Pham, platoon outfield, which I would argue is better than the Will Myers platoon, you know.
Yeah. You know what option. You know what I would have done with that money from clearing up Will Myers?
What's that, Marver?
I would have traded for Corey Kluber.
Sure, yeah.
I think I'm for nothing.
I mean,
it's kind of interesting how cheap he went.
Sure.
Right? It's got to be like a huge...
I mean, he must really not be in great shape. That's the thing, right? Like, we just...
Well, we were paying Garrett Richards $15 million to not be in good shape. And this is kind of... I used Cole Hamels as an example, but Kluber is just as easily an example of the Padres chose Garrett Richards over Corey Kluber. Like, how many rehabbing pitchers can you have? You usually have one, right? So in this case...
Well, we have three.
Their salaries aren't that different. Like, Richards and Kluber are the aging veterans with high potential for, you know, high ceiling for in quotes, high ceiling for rebounds, right? So I think that not having Kluber is the opportunity cost of having Richards.
Yeah, and that's a bad opportunity cost, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, but I would rather bet on the multiple time Cy Young Award winner.
I would have rather had a future Hall of Famer, Corey Kluber.
Yes, whose success doesn't depend on high velocity, really.
Well, and whose ceiling is Cy Young. Yeah. No one will argue that Garrett Richards' ceiling is Cy Young.
No. Garrett Richards' ceiling was...
He almost won Cy Young in that year.
He had a
4 years ago. When did Corey Kluber win his last Cy Young caliber season?
But he didn't actually almost win the Cy Young Award. Like, his year 4 years ago was like 2.8 WAR. The year before that, he only threw 160 innings. He was worth close to 5 WAR.
He had won like 5 or 6 WAR seasons.
It was 4.8 WAR, and it was 160 something innings. It wasn't a full. Mm. It was like 25 starts or something. So, I mean, I feel like if they're both healthy, if Richards and Kluber are both healthy, which, you know, take that for what it's worth, I think Corey Kluber will be worth more wins above replacement in maybe 10 starts over Richards' entire season.
I'd agree with that.
And the Padres gambled on Garrett Richards as opposed to, you know, the other options
they had, a
safer option like Cole Hamels or a higher upside option like a Corey Kluber who's also recovering from injury.
Any variety of like high, you know, like Adam Wainwright. You know, there's a lot of names on this list of free agents that you could argue they could have taken a chance on to rehab. And the question is, do you think Garrett Richards is a better bet than the other options? I think in my case, I'd say Kluber is probably a better bet.
I wish they had dumped Will and signed Ryu. That, I think, would have been just, like, perfect for what the Padres need.
He ended up getting quite a nice lucrative deal.
$480
for him. I mean, that's not a small amount of money.
Just to close out the Will thing, I don't think they're not trying. They made it clear last year they were trying very hard to get rid of
Rosenthal, like, tweeted out, like, they're including Will, or they're talking about Will to every single team.
Right.
Like,
And the fact that nobody wants him tells me either the Padres have been unwilling to pay the prospect cost or have drastically overrated his value.
Or teams just know the Padres are like kind of like the Padres are just being strong.
Yeah,
like they know they have like little
leverage.
You know, little leverage. And that's part of it for me too, is like you know that when you get rid of Will at this point, you're getting negative value on the trade. And so for me, I would just hold him.
Right. But the thing is, mistakes cost you. Like so, to think that there's no cost in making an incredibly massive mistake.
Here's the thing.
Silly.
Here's the real comparison. How much million of prospects do you think you have to trade to get rid of Will Myers?
40
million. So let's say, what can you get for $40 million of prospects in a player who's about to hit free agency?
Wait, what?
If the Padres, for example, traded $40 million of prospects,
held
on to Will Myers, and acquired someone who had $40 million of surplus value.
Oh.
Who can they get for that?
Okay,
right? as opposed to
that guy, because they're paying Will Myers. Like there is some ceiling on what they can pay, and players you trade for aren't free.
Sure, you can get a 1 year. So I guess a better compensation. You can get a. Well, you could probably get a pretty cheap player on a short term deal, for $40 million of prospects.
Right, but again, that costs money. Also, like it costs the prospects, but it also costs the money.
You might be able to get them to eat. For example, a guy who's expiring at the end of this year who's making $20 million, let's say a 1 year or like a 1 year $15 million, last year of arbitration type player, you could probably get them to take all of that $15 million for $40 million of prospect value.
To pay a little more in prospects.
Right. Well, to pay you pay $40 million in prospect value, you get a $15
million
player being paid for. Yeah, sure. Who's going to provide $25 million of excess value, whatever calculation you're making.
The thing is, all of these scenarios are losing trades, right? But when you have an albatross contract, yes, it's a losing trade because it's an albatross. Like, that's the cost of making mistakes.
I feel like it doesn't scale linearly, though. Like, when you have, like, a player who's got, like, a longer term.
Four WAR is worth, exponentially more than three.
What I'm saying is when you have, like, a real albatross contract, even though the player, Will, might be worth $35 million as opposed to $80 million or whatever it is that's left on his deal.
Like
I think
Hosmer
teams
being worth $10 million
teams
and
are looking,
$120 million left
teams
on his
aren't,
deal.
I feel like the teams you're trading with aren't looking at that as like a negative $55 million that you have to make up. They're looking at it as, all right, you want to get rid of this? You have to give me $70. You have to make it enticing for me to take this on. I'm not going to take him on and assume there's any value left in his deal. If you want to dump money, you're going to pay to dump the money. As opposed to where there's like a marginal player with like a 1 year deal sort of left, I feel like there's a lot more teams that are willing to take that player on. You get closer to even value for that. So I don't know. I feel like
there are
losing deals and there are worse losing deals. And I feel like trading Will is probably closer to like the worst losing deals.
Here's my
deals.
Concern. Like you talked about Lindor, right? Mm-hmm. So what does he make this year? $15 million?
He's an ARB, yeah. Something like that, 15,
so,
20.
Is your assumption that they would trade for him and just add $15 million of payroll and they would field $157 million payroll next year? Is that a realistic belief? Or do you think that having $20 million going to Will has hindered their ability to add that? Like, this is all hypothetical, but do the Padres then try to get the Indians to eat some of the money in the next year to offset some of the salary? Like, these are the considerations that you have when you're paying what I personally believe is a good level of payroll for this franchise.
Yeah,
I'm satisfied with the level of payroll, and that's saying something as someone who has harped on them for payroll. In my wildest dreams, I thought that harping about league average was a losing bet, that it would just never happen, and we're there. So I'm not one to be like, well, they should just spend another $20 million. Like, this is the level I thought was appropriate for this ball club. It's a level that you can win with, right? We've always said it's an ante to win a world championship is to have a league average payroll, and they are now at that ante level. Now the question is, can we better and more optimally configure that payroll? And as long as we have three more years of Will and, God, six more years of Hosmer, it's difficult to do that without removing one of those contracts. And, yeah, they're clearing some payroll in 2021. They're going to clear Richards. They're going to clear Hector Oliveira. There's some other ones. Like, they're going to clear like 25 to 30 mil, I think. But that's all they've got because they have all of these long-term commitments to Pomeranz, Myers, Hosmer, Machado, you know, these large outlays for them.
Yeah.
And at some point, you need to clear that money if you're hoping to find productive uses for that, what I believe is a good level of payroll for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they can trade for Lindor for a price that they think's worth it, they're going to do it. And then try to figure everything else after that. I mean,
and dump Will?
And then dump Will, probably. I mean, that's like the only option.
And that may be true. Like, maybe there's not a necessity to dump Will because they haven't put the deal together to add payroll. But I do wonder about Shogo. Like, can you just add $12 million? Can they just have $155 million payroll? Because that's way higher than I would have ever advocated for last year, because I didn't think league average was feasible for them. So
I don't know about Shogo, but as far as Lindor, that would come.
You
back
make
to,
room for one of the best players in baseball,
right, yeah. And that's what Papa Pedro has been saying is that, you know, if it's we have this number. However, if there's something that is a total game changer, then we might, you know, would open up the books for it. You know, we'll go above and beyond.
But I think they would desperately dump Will.
They want to do that regardless of whether they can get.
But that would raise the motivation to do so.
But think of how many prospects you have to give up if you're giving up prospects to dump Will, giving up prospects to acquire Francisco Lindor. How many eggs are you putting in this
basket?
To trade for Lindor right now, though. Like, I don't see the.
Wow, Marver's against acquiring Francisco Lindor.
I'm against trading for him if salary then becomes an issue.
The salary's already an issue. That's just the bed we've made.
I don't think it's the right time to make a trade for that sort of superstar. Don't get me wrong. I'm all in favor of trading for those types of superstars, but I think there are enough things there that don't make sense for me. If you then have to spin around and give up more prospects to dump Will Myers, if you're going to lose Lindor to free agency, which you are going to, and it's going to happen without you going into the season starting Patino and Gore and knowing with some level of certainty they're going to be top of the rotation type arms in the major league level, I think that's a premature move. Like, 2 years from now, there's going to be another guy. I mean, every year, seemingly, there's a guy like a Lindor who's available. Whether it was Garrett Cole two off seasons ago with the Pirates, whether it's, you know, there's always someone of that level that you can acquire. Doing it now and then having the issue of salary and losing him and basically depleting your farm system to do it, it seems like a move to me that overall reduces our odds of winning World Series titles. As great as Lindor is.
Yeah.
Now, if they're going to acquire Lindor and have serious conversations about re-signing him long-term, and then, you know, Tatis is fine moving to center and you're going to sign Tatis long-term and just figure out the money in the future, then fuck yeah, I'm on board. But that's not...
That doesn't like seem I, like the real
That doesn't seem very... Yeah. Doesn't seem like a very realistic outcome. So,
so the way I see it is that, you know, signing Myers, signing Hosmer were mistakes. We know that. We have to pay for it one way or the other. If we can get Lindor... We should get Lindor. Like, that's a win for the team, unmistakably. Like, you know, the farm system has already been dinged by signing Myers and Hosmer. Sure. Like, because ownership says we're not going to spend more than whatever. We just haven't realized that loss yet. But
sure.
I don't care. Like, I want Lindor if we can get him.
Yeah. Well, I hate to leave you on this note, but I have the second of three Christmas parties I have to get to. Family Christmas parties.
Wow, lack of commitment to the
So
party.
I'm going
to
leave this in the very capable hands
priority,
of the rest
Robert.
Of it. Yeah, this is true. You are not my priority, Chad. This is very true.
Did you say a Christmas party? Newsflash. That was...
I know. Well, we have...
The second of three, he said.
Yeah, so my sister-in-law's in town.
Do people have Christmas parties after Christmas?
It's not a These are actually Christmas celebrations. It's like Christmas. This is the second of three Christmases I'm going to, yes. Because we have different family that comes from out of town, et cetera. So, oh, no, I'm going home and changing, and then we're leaving. I'm not. I did this for you.
These are your scrub clothes?
These are my scrub clothes.
Everyone,
yeah.
He has the deep V again, and he has a matching V with a sweater.
No, it's a V sweater. It's a
no,
normal.
That's a
it's a
bacon,
normal crew neck.
That's actually a crew
shirt.
Neck that has a bacon collar.
Yeah, it does have
with
bacon collar.
Sweater.
It does have bacon collar.
And then what appears to be linen pants, but I'm not sure.
They're nice. Yeah.
They're nice.
They are
you
nice.
Supposed to wear linen after Labor Day? I thought that was a faux pas.
Brown linen's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, brown. They are brown. That's actually why I wore them to be more brown. But yeah, I have to
are
take off,
tapered?
But I'll leave this in the caper. What's that?
Are those tapered?
They might be tapered.
Are those capris?
Shameful.
These are. These are some nice little loafers and some.
What are those? Espadrille loafers? Is that?
They are. Yes. Huh. Espadrille loafers.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's my go-to.
Go-to.
Very comfortable.
Corey,
and at the very end of their life, and at the
Corey,
very end of their life, you
Corey
can.
Corey and Chad, do you have go-to espadrille loafers? Is that?
What the hell is that?
Cole Haan.
All right. Well, fine, Marvin. That's
right.
Fine. We'll close out the episode.
That's what I like to hear. And then make sure you send me the episode because I have to at the beginning of the episode I have to put all the Craig Elston highlights of my goal score at the old media and new media game, which we didn't
Just
talk about. That
me. Send those to me.
I'll send you all the audio bites. It's a couple minutes of like how high quality my goal
real quick,
was. So, yeah.
Was that the highlight of your life?
Certainly not.
Is it ahead of your wedding day?
No.
Is it ahead of your... It's not ahead of your childhood.
It's not even my top sports moment of, like, the past month.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, well,
shooting
7 of 13 from the floor and getting a block and a half the highlight of the month?
Close. There's a guy who dunks really, really hard at our gym. Like, every time he gets in the key, he'll dunk extremely hard. And I think his goal is to try to break the glass one day. And he went up for a dunk recently, and I was... helping in rotation, and I swatted the shit out of him, like maybe like a foot under the rim, like not even close to blocking him, but he fell and he made like a noise like a little girl, and it was the highlight of my month.
Wow. Is this the D3 bench player you play with?
No, he actually started at Point Loma. This guy, he's pretty good.
Oh wow,
this guy's actually pretty good.
Is there a D4? Good. Is that what they're
I any? Actually don't even know what
it's
what
not
is Point Loma.
I think it's NAIA.
What is? Oh, yeah, they are NAIA. Yeah, they're not even.
They felt the roster.
Hey, Marver,
but they're pretty good for an NAIA.
Since I can only
AIT.
Actually get responses from you while we're literally podcasting,
yeah.
Do you want to create an indoor soccer team?
I'm definitely in for indoor soccer.
Because I found the San Marcos League I sent to you.
But where does that? Where are those games
at,
though?
It's at Bradley Park.
Maybe. Like, why don't we just play at Ecky?
I mean, we can, but
what's
I
wrong with
I
playing?
I couldn't find a league.
They have, like, a bajillion leagues.
You're a San Marcos resident. Come on.
I would much rather play at Ecky. I've played at Ecky a bunch. I know the quality of play. I mean, I've never
there's
seen
not a
this fields at Bradley Park.
Obviously, I would rather play in Encinitas. There's not a league.
They don't have a league anymore?
There's no sign-ups available for a league. Bradley Park.
I will email Juan. He runs all those leagues.
You try to get...
I will.
Look at big swinging dick Marver over here.
No.
I will email Juan.
No, the only reason I know this guy...
men's a recreational sport.
The only reason I know this guy is because I got a red card playing my most recent game and I had to have him adjudicate it for me because it was a bullshit red card. I was supposed to miss the championship.
How much cash did you pay
him? I didn't pay him anything. I just sent him a nasty email.
This
and
is
then
like
I
fantasy
got to play.
Football talk, but just way, way worse.
Oh, speaking of which, you want to see the proof
no,
for my
no,
fantasy
we
football?
No, we don't want
to
see.
Give the mic to Corey.
And the podcast now.
This is the proof for my this is happening. This trophy's coming.
All right, great. Marvin, thanks for joining us.
You brought it
us.
Up. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
We'll handle everything from here.
Merry Christmas party.
All right, let's close out the episode with what would you do? What would you do for the rest of the... Don't forget to clear your tab, Marver.
He did.
What would you do for the rest of the postseason? The offseason. Like, how do you finish? What do you think is a realistic finish to the offseason? We'll go around the table. And some of this will depend on what you think their total payroll will be, you know.
I think there's like a 40% chance the roster is set right now.
Ugh.
Other than like minor Pierce.
Well, other than like Pierce Johnson and whatever. Like I don't really see. I think they want to start Jerks and Profar at second. I think that's like
desperately
what AJ's,
want to. Right?
AJ has been wet dreaming about that for years. Hosmer's not going anywhere.
I keep hearing that, but he didn't really try very hard to get him. Like, it didn't cost that much for the A's to get him.
Yeah, which, I mean, maybe points towards AJ actually having restraint.
Because we started Ian Kinsler last year.
Can we not talk about him?
Why? He's gone. It's like the greatest moment of the offseason, right?
Oh, my
like,
God. We didn't even talk about that, did we?
Both with the Perella, like, DFA and the Kinsler retirement, such unsatisfying ends for the Padres fans. Like,
yeah. I was really satisfied.
Well, I mean, I'm really happy that Kinsler's not going to play again.
Really don't.
Honestly, if they want to keep him in the front, I don't give a shit.
But now he's going to be a mentor.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Well, apparently, like, what's really weird is like we keep reading these things about how much the guys liked him. But he was just terrible.
He's a borderline Hall of Fame player. They like that thing.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe he's a good guy.
I was trying to read into that. Does that mean that all the players hate us and Ian Kinsler's like the champion of them?
How many players follow you?
Well, I don't follow any players, so they don't follow, obviously none.
How many players follow you, Corey?
None. Luis follows me on Instagram. That's it. No players.
He likes your stuff.
Yeah, the Padres don't even follow me.
I mean, Padres don't follow me.
Yeah, Wayne follows me, but you know, we're very.
I think when you're a player, it's definitely like fans are them. You know, it's not part of what you're doing. Like, you know, you often see the worst of the fan base, like on your social media, screaming at you.
Yeah. I never at a player or anything like that.
No, when, never.
When you know, I never.
And,
ever,
and to be honest, I don't want to hear from. I don't even enjoy player interviews. Like.
Well, most of them are terrible.
Darren
Smith interview.
Which one?
When the Hedgy Darren Smith show.
Oh, the last interview? You
know, the hour long. That was like decent.
That one's okay because it's not about playing baseball.
Because Darren Smith is the best media in San Diego and actually has good relationships with
the
interesting
only,
people.
Really, the only, I mean, other than our beloved Ben and Woods in the morning, but I mean, they don't, like, they're. You know, as much as I love Bennett Woods, their player interviews are totally worthless to me.
Yeah, and we know, like, they get the questions beforehand. Like, Darren will grill players or grill front office members, and then they'll thank Darren for doing it, too.
I just don't think players are interesting. They're too guarded.
Well, I mean,
Darren does get something out of Hedgie because they have, like, their own relationship, but there's nothing interesting that comes out of any player
interview. They go through classes with their agents to not be interesting, yeah.
But their agents, their team, they all have these public relations classes.
Well, it's like the Preller interviews. The Preller interviews are always
and
horrible. Unless he's on with Darren.
It doesn't have to be like that.
Yeah, because Darren will get in a couple good, like, you know, what's your favorite cereal? Or, you know, whatever that bullshit is, you know. And Ben and Woods will do that, too. But it's like, we're going to have Preller on. So what?
No, he says nothing.
He says nothing every single time.
Wayne is there to prep them ahead of time. Fowler has said this, actually, that Wayne preps him for the interviews. And you know, you're only going to get so much.
Fowler's the best interview.
Especially
and
if
he
the
shouldn't
hosts,
do media.
And especially if the hosts are not, like, motivated to press and ask follow-up questions, which, let's be honest, most of the interviewers are not doing that. Mm-hmm. So, to me, those are all zero-value interviews.
But Preller, you can just keep following up, and it just
it never goes anywhere.
No, he can just snakes his way right out.
Fowler,
he can talk for 2 hours.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. If you push Fowler, maybe you could get something. You could probably get something out of him.
Oh, Fowler says something crazy every single time.
But everyone defers to him.
Yeah. I mean, how long are we going to talk about heads are going to roll?
Right.
He just shouldn't be doing media. He really shouldn't.
Yeah. And there's a reason.
I don't know how Papa Pete hasn't cut the.
It's amazing.
I don't know why he hasn't just like fully taken like the executive chairmanship at this point. Like, wasn't the whole plan that Fowler was going to be like the face of the team for until 2020?
Years.
Or when did the 5 years begin?
You know, this is actually interesting. Did you see all the it's the end of the decade, right? So they've done all this like top 10 moments of the Padres.
No.
I finally came to the realization that this ownership group has owned this team for 8 years now. And we talk about them like they just acquired the team.
Is it 8 years now?
It's been 8 years.
Well, Seidler hasn't
bought the team during the Josh Burns era. AJ didn't come on until 2014.
Well, the Fowler group did. Seidler joined
they were
in
together.
2016
over. No. Seidler was in the original purchasing group.
I thought they increased their equity recently, though, right?
From who? Regardless, Seidler and Fowler have been the ownership leadership of this team since 2012. It's been 8 years. Mm. That took me a little off guard that it's been that long that we've had them. And because I think we can all agree that the top 10 moments of the decade have been shamefully awful, right?
And did you see
what did they highlight? The Machado Hoffman signing. Induction, the Machado signing, and the All-Star game was in San Diego.
Yeah.
Those were the top three moments. So of
because
that
we
decade.
Have a beautiful park.
Yeah,
had nothing to do with them. Yeah,
right.
I just remember, like, you guys saw that Casavell article where it's like the top 10 like in-game moments.
Oh.
And like he totally got it wrong. Like number one or two should have been the tank game in Arizona where
yes,
we secured
which
the
didn't
pick
even
for
make
McKenzie
the top 10.
Gore. Well, that was I was
riveted to the team.
I was screaming when he gave up the home run.
I haven't been that excited watching a game since the game 163.
No, my heart was it was definitely the most adrenaline I've ever had watching a Padres game.
And
my
it was
heart
a high
was
point of Padres Twitter because we were all unified in something.
It was glorious
to lose that
glorious.
Game.
What a great time!
And it didn't even make the top 10.
No,
that's amazing.
No. Oh my God!
Jeff Sanders. Yesterday or the day before, with the top players at each position for the decade, it was a slideshow or whatever. Every slide just broke my heart a little bit more.
Just stabbed me
just,
right
like,
in the heart.
Yeah, see Matt Latos on there. We're just like, oh my god.
I mean, and like, has, but
well,
I
look, what have we suffered through?
Why do they write these articles? Like, they know it's bad.
The content
for
like,
this exact
nothing's
reaction.
Going on. Yeah, it's like end of the year. They just gotta.
Yeah, they got a sweet slideshow
yeah,
out of
this,
it, which
go
is
give
so
us
many
this.
Clicks.
Yeah, right, oh, and I'm sure it got a ton of clicks, which is what they're looking for.
But I think there's this inclination to be like, well, the decade sucked because of the old ownership group. But like, I started thinking about the 8 year thing, and I was like, no, it's this ownership group,
and still haven't really sniffed 500.
Right. Right.
And what's the closest they've been? Like six games under, eight games under?
I don't think it's even been that close.
10 games under?
Have they had a 76 and 84 years since they've taken
over?
Maybe, 2014 might be the high point.
What, do they get credit for that?
Yeah. They got Seth Smith, the final piece for that year.
Oh, that's true. That is true. That's true.
Corey, you didn't go. What is your? What do you think the rest of the offseason is?
Oh. I feel like there's something that's still out there.
Big?
I mean, it's not
something
even
big?
It's not even January. I think that there's some kind of a trade out there because they still haven't touched the catching position. The outfield is still FAM and a bunch of question marks.
I'm fine with. I want to see more of Mejia. Like,
no,
I know.
Yeah, but you're
no.
A prospect hugger.
I would love to see Mejia be the
yes,
starter.
But that's not what I'm thinking with Mejia. Yeah.
No, I'd love to see Mejia be the
I'm
guy.
Okay with yeah. I'm okay with yeah. keeping the two, to be honest. Like,
yeah, but
if they can find some balance between the two,
yeah. But
better,
we talked about on the last,
they
one.
Never will.
I just won't. That's not what he's here for. He thinks he's a starter. He thinks he's the man.
See, they need a package. Hedges and Myers to go to a team together because they're already best buds. You know, like they're
perfect.
Like kind of
yes.
the same person.
Yes, yes, yes.
Makes a lot of sense, really.
Yeah. But
wow.
I just think
AJ, give me an internship.
But again, like
he has to go.
At this point, like they would have done it if they could, right?
You
if
know?
There was interest in it.
No, I don't think so. I think there's still a lot of time for like. I think there's still a lot of like pent up trades that the entire, league has to go through. So I think there's still time.
I think an AL team would love to have Hedges. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't the Indians want Hedges?
Especially like, if you're gonna package Hedges with something else, a prospect and like a Lucchese or even do with the Will dump or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I totally see that happen.
Not that I'm not all for it. I just part of me thinks like maybe they tried. Like this is what we thought last year with Will. Like
maybe.
It was all the talk. Like they're trying so hard to get rid of him and. Maybe there's nobody that really cares enough about him.
Maybe. Yeah, it's very possible.
I mean, let's take a step back. It seems the news about, I mean, you know a lot more about the minor league system than me, Chad. The Torrens, what's the book on him? Excellent defensive catcher. Maybe
not,
questionable bat.
Not necessarily excellent, but like
very
good defensively. I mean, young, the bat like has some signs of life, which is better than most catching prospects that have a good defense. So,
and what's the profile of most minor league catchers that are highly rated? It's there are some that are super offensive, limited defensive. That's Francisco Mejia, and there are many catchers that are excellent defensively and have no bat. right? And so maybe the major league baseball has seen that most teams have a great glove, poor bat catcher in their system.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, that's why, I mean, Luis Campusano is probably one of the most interesting prospects the Padres
because
have,
of his offensive profile.
Because he was the best hitter in the Cal League last year, which is really an incredible feat. I think Luis Torrens is like a very good candidate for trade to be traded as well. I mean, they and Blake Hunt too. I mean, they have like they're very stacked at catcher, really.
I mean, Blake Hunt's another one. That's
I mean, he's kind of got
possibly
both, just
possibly
like a bit,
all glove, no hit. I mean, that may be how he develops. I mean, if I were betting on it, that's probably how I'd bet on Blake Hunt.
And people were mad about Austin Allen going.
Yeah.
Like, we have 1,000 catchers. Yeah. Like, who gives a fuck?
But that's the thing. I don't think we're the only team with 1,000 no-hit, good glove catchers. I think that's fairly common in a lot of systems.
Yeah. You know, the bigger loss, I feel like, was Buddy Reed. I was not expecting him to be the player to be named later. That feels like a like, oh, I mean,
here comes
Austin,
prospect-hugging Chad but, again.
No, I just think you can do something better with him. Like, Austin Allen by itself was already a bit of an overpay for Profar, especially with his salary. But when you add in Buddy Reed, like, Buddy Reed is not a good player. But he has tools enough that, like, he's interesting to some teams. I don't know.
I'm excited to hear Chad tell us how great Michael Geddes is going to be also.
Oh, God.
About his incredible tools and how he just needs to wait on his bat to come around.
His bat's the only thing he has going for him, really. I mean, except he can't hit. But, you know.
All right, well, here's my prediction. I think that Chad's probably right. I think his 40% prediction is low on the Padres doing nothing else.
That's a bit optimistic,
I think.
So does this team go 500?
See...
Oh, my God.
That's
wow.
an interesting question because obviously Padres Twitter has been aflame with the projections, right? The Zips projections that came out, which I'm going to add were 8 games higher than what reality was in 2019. They drastically overrated Hosmer. They overrated Myers. Like, there's a lot of like, what did you, when you looked at those Zips, that graphic that Dan Szymborski puts out with, you know, with each position on the field.
Oh, yeah.
Do you really believe in those projections? Like, do you think Profar is a 2+ war, like, slam dunk at second base? Do you think Hosmer's a 1 war first baseman? Like, there's a lot of... And I'd be interested in actually in Marver doing... We were talking about the Keith Law manifesto before, which, if we're all betting, is never coming out ever. I'd be interested in him doing a look at Zips and seeing and Steamer, because I think we take it as gospel that, wow, this is an 85-win team on paper. And last year's team was an 80-win team on paper. But where does Zips go wrong? Where does Steamer go wrong? Where do they habitually over-project? And do you think Garrett Richards is a 3-war starter next year?
No.
I think that's a low likelihood.
No. So I think the problem in, like, too bad Marver's here. It's not here, but I mean,
is it?
All these projection systems, they're designed to be optimized on average for every player in the league. So, I mean, it's just regression based, right? That's why Hosmer's a 1 WAR player, even though he's not, because they're assuming he's going to go back to what he kind of did in Kansas City. And same thing with Garrett Richards. You know, he for the couple years he had success, it was really good stuff. But I think last year, just like the Padres had a few players that underperformed that you wouldn't have expected. Like Manny did like a few wins worse than we would have expected. And that's also a sign of worry. And
sure.
Have you guys heard this like supposedly grumblings around the industry that Manny might not be really worth the deal?
Bite your tongue, Chad.
Just got to put it out there.
You're hugging Blake Hunt and you're bashing Manny Machado? Shameful.
Listen, he doesn't hustle, so I'm just kidding.
But Anthony Rendon, he really hustles. Manny just doesn't bring it every night.
You don't see that kind of ball player every day.
These ball players.
You know, Franmil and Renfro.
Well, and you actually brought up Manny. I mean, the projection systems have seen him as a 5+ WAR player, and that's obviously the biggest obvious area of growth off of last year. But and it was actually interesting in that there was a difference between Zips and Steamer on Tatis. I think it was Steamer that projected a regression off of for Tatis, even playing a full year, being worth less WAR than last year.
So you said it was Zips that did?
I believe that was Steamer that projects less, and then Zips I think projected essentially the same. given a full year, which in a way is actually regression because, like, they're kind of projecting the same level of WAR playing time. So, you know, there's some.
But see, these systems don't capture the edge case players well.
Sure,
at all.
And I think it's a little premature for people to start celebrating an 85-win season off of the Zips projections because they've been notoriously bad at predicting specifically this team's performance with this mix of players.
I mean, the way to look at it is just saying, like, it is an averaged outcome with some pretty wide range of possibilities around that of error. You know, so, like, it going from 80 to 85 from the previous year does show that the team's improved, that they did get FAM. You know, Davies is a marginal improvement over Lauer.
Right. More playing time from Tatis.
Yeah, more playing time for Tatis. Richards could be better. But none of that's guaranteed, obviously. But
right.
But the thing is, you know, the upside is, too, is that, like, you know, things can go better, too, for the Padres.
Sure. And Tatis and Machado are the most obvious looks at large
and
leaps in WAR.
And Lamets. I'd say those four.
I think the larger leaps are on the position side with Machado and Tatis. I see, like, maybe you could see a WAR of growth from Lamet and
I could see two from Paddock. I could see three or four from Lamet. Like Lamet's stuff.
Did you say three or four? Like, you're looking at him as a 6+ WAR pitcher? Because I don't see that.
Okay, three or four is a bit much. Like, I would expect, like, a 2 WAR improvement from Lamet. And I think it's not I don't think it's impossible that he hits 5-6. I really don't.
I don't disagree. I think there's room for growth. And so I take a step back to the original question of, do you think they're going to go 500? Mm. And so we can start looking at the deltas, right, from last year. Mm. You replaced Eric Lauer with Garrett Richards. Like we talked about earlier, I don't think it's a slam dunk that Garrett Richards is necessarily better than a 2 WAR Eric Lauer. I mean, is he really going to provide that much value?
Well, I think it makes more sense to say Davies over Lauer, and that's like maybe a half WAR, maybe.
Who is Richards replacing? He's replacing time from the mix of Quantrill,
the bullpen days, the Quantrill,
failed Strom experience.
Is Richards just like I was saying earlier, like a perfect bridge to Gore? Because I don't think they're going to break with Gore. I think they're going to have Gore pitch.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple
months. And that's another potential embedded source of growth. Right.
Yeah. And Richards is at this point, he's a rental car. They're going to run him into the ground.
Yeah.
And then when he's done, like he gets hurt or he's really sucks or something like that, then it's like, okay, now it's time for Gore. Yeah.
And if we're looking at the deltas again, I mean, and you look at the acquisition, so you're right, they brought on Davies. You could argue is maybe what a half WAR better than Lauer at best case.
Yeah, but probably not worth the salary.
Sure,
increase too,
ignoring the salary, but just purely improvement wise, he's a marginal improvement over Lauer. You brought in Grisham to platoon apparently, and what is that a net +1 in WAR?
Because you've taken away
Margot's honestly. terrible against right-handed pitcher performance, and you've replaced it with Grisham, which is, you know, for that, we could say maybe a WAR, right?
And also you balance out the lineup, which adds some value not attributed to a single player.
Pretty marginal, though.
And there's also an upshot with Grisham, too, of course.
Sure. You've replaced Renfro with FAM.
Yeah, which is two,
which
three.
Which has gone from 2 to a 3 to 4 WAR player. So that's a net +1/+2, right?
Yeah.
What else have we done?
Oh, what about the loss of Nick Martini? Have you guys put that in yet?
That's like -5.
Man, I listened to the announcers, and he is an incredible on-base specimen. So
maybe he's the guy that owns that huge martini house in East County. Marvel was telling us about.
Look, no, it's right up
the
hill.
Look at Chad bringing the wordplay.
Yeah, I know.
And then Profar.
And Profar, I would say...
What are we talking, plus one?
Yeah, I would say +1 over Udi.
So are you worried about him?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
It's not the zips. It's the yips that worry me about him. That's a serious thing. Like, that
he
destroys careers.
The last couple months, he did a lot better defensively.
Okay.
But he's by no means a dependable source of production.
But neither was Urias.
Sure.
Urias.
That's why, best case, you could say it's a +2, right?
Yeah,
It's somewhere between +1 and +2. Yeah. So in the aggregate, we've talked about the changes, and we've totaled what, +7, +8-ish? They were a 70-win team last year.
Yeah.
So just from the additions and the transactions are +7, +8, 77, 78.
Yeah.
Then you look at possible internal improvements of +2 from Manny, +2 from
Tatis,
Tatis,
yeah.
plus
maybe one three
to
total
three from the pitching
Paddock.
Staff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you're looking at maybe if everything works out and no one gets injured, an 83-win mm-hmm. team.
Yeah.
Which is above 500, right?
Yeah, I mean, wait, I think, hold on. And then plus 10 from Tingler.
Oh, I forgot
you're
about
forgetting
the Tingler
magic.
Effect.
The Tingler effect. That's 10 wins.
With that
I'm telling you right now.
That he was wearing.
Oh, man.
Yes. That's yeah, 10 I mean, wins.
Wow.
And he's gone, baby.
Dodgers are cooked.
Oh, I mean, but we did forget the bullpen. That's probably
I don't,
one to two.
I think that's aggressive.
Well, but I mean, we're getting Strom back in the bullpen.
They were already a good bullpen. Like, everyone thinks the
they
bullpen
were not, they
sucked
were not
last
a great
year,
bullpen
but war-wise,
year.
They were a good bullpen last
well,
year.
Well, because of Kirby had, like, three war.
Right, but do you think he's a three war pitcher again?
No, but I think...
So, and
get
reliever
plus,
war is hard to come by.
Well...
Munoz was excellent yeah. last year.
Munoz is probably, like, I would say, probably a war improvement over last year.
Yeah, but
year.
They're getting rid of it. I mean, there's some shit that, I mean, when you look at the bullpen last year, there was some garbage in that mm-hmm. bullpen.
Sure.
That's now gone.
But there is always garbage.
I mean,
garbage
there was a Maton.
Yes. And there's going to be garbage this year, too. Yeah,
but it's yeah. pretty solid.
I mean,
when you
I think
look
from
at,
the bullpen yeah, will probably be improved a couple wins from
last
year. Yeah, I agree.
Maton was coming out, throwing up, I mean, just gopher balls.
What was Stammen worth?
Wing?
Oh, he was, like, barely anything, I think, because he really. God, remember that.
But, by the way, what is going on with that?
I mean, because Andy literally killed.
Agent. I know, but like,
Andy
they,
literally
and they keep
killed
talking
Stammen.
That he's coming back.
Who is
that they're still
no,
talking?
No, there's
not.
No room for him now. There's
might.
No room for him. No, that would be
place
ridiculous.
I have no idea.
Andy's gone. Remember, Andy
like,
was.
He's going to the Cubs. You know, Stammen
was zero. Stammen was worth half a WAR, which for a reliever is actually a good reliever season. And to me, Pomerantz is. Going to be somewhere between 0.5 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And Stammen had what 153 appearances last year? Was that am I close?
A world record of appearances.
Yeah, I mean I think truthfully no one wants to say it, but this year is another developmental year. Like
it,
like with all the question marks there are, it absolutely
look at what we're
is.
Looking at. Yeah. We want Grisham to develop.
Yeah, we need Grisham. We need Profar. I mean, Hosmer is a negative
he's
one war delta.
Essentially, a developmental prospect at this point.
Worse,
he can barely field the position, and he has major flaws in his swing. That's what you want to see, and that's what we're like. Well, Tingler's going to fix him.
But if it's another developmental year, why wouldn't you just keep Urias? Why not give him a full real season?
Here comes the
Urias
hugger.
I think it's interesting what they do with Profar,
I mean,
this offseason. Or like
he's developmental also.
I know. Well, I know exactly. But why would they
yeah,
just
what,
keep him for the 1 year?
Like,
what's the plan for second base after this season? Then if they don't keep Profar,
yeah,
Kinsler coming out of retirement.
That's why they're keeping him close. Put him in the front
office.
Plus,
he realizes Cameo is not going to pay the bills. He's coming back on the field.
Man, Corey's single-handedly going to finance his new car.
Guys, we've really taped a mega episode.
I mean,
this was a
mega win, I think, for Quintelligence getting together.
It really be a mega win. Mega
God,
win.
The last 15 minutes have been great without Marv.
Yeah, this is probably the best discussion. He needs to have his dedicated mic, and we'll pass one off to Marv when he has something insightful
Let's
to say.
Let's just eliminate. Like, Corey, we were on a good roll there where we just eliminated Marv from the podcast. And then Corey got too busy to come tape podcasts.
When did I get too busy?
How many times have I sent out a... You don't ghost me, at least.
I was on the last podcast. Were you? Yeah,
no,
exactly.
I was in Japan.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay.
Traveling the globe, assassinating people or whatever you do.
Let's bring back the Vine. Let's bring back the Vine and Tap.
Yeah, well, yeah, we definitely should do a Vine and Tap one.
We've
yeah.
got our spot
but
there.
But I'll tell you what, this is nice.
I'm good with here as well.
I love it here, yeah. Yeah, this is nice.
Yeah.
As long as the methane doesn't get worse.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wish I'd close the door in here. I can see the cloud seeping in. Out of the corner of my eye, I just saw a cloud of gases coming out over here. And it could be the grill, but that could also easily be methane.
Well, that is
right
probably
there.
Also methane.
And if you recall from the last episode they taped with the dogs going crazy here.
Oh, my God. That was,
do we have
it's
any
not
evidence
a coincidence.
That that's not methane influenced?
No. No,
because
certainly not. I mean, how's your dog doing? She's just chilling out.
Yeah, exactly.
She's kind of
shaky.
You go.
If we're not,
is that normal?
Does she look lethargic? Because that is a case of methane.
She's kind of just sat there. Yeah. Hasn't done much. Hey, pup.
I don't know. She looks out of it. I need to get her back into some fresh O2.
Yeah.
I'm going to take her to an oxygen bar after this to try to regain her senses.
It was probably like 6 in Encinitas, right?
Yeah, so many. All right, guys. Well, we really did it on this holiday weekend.
Yeah,
I guess I'll have to decide if I split this into two episodes or To really,
like just to get the to extra
really
downloads,
the podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to get the extra mic. You know,
with our beloved Seals on a terrible downturn, it might be time for us to step it up with some downloads.
Yeah, Seals Jackoff has not been doing great, has he?
So they lost again last night.
Lost terribly.
What about the chosen one, the boy, Stotts?
Stotts, yeah. He's hurt still.
Oh, okay.
The team doesn't report anything.
Are they 0-3 or 0-4?
0-3. They're playing tomorrow, and if they go 0-4, the season.
How many games are in the season?
16, 20, something like that.
Oh, wow, okay. This is not...
So
they'll lose the city.
You need to go back to Steve Govett or whatever and grill him.
You know what? That's a good idea. Don't worry. We've got 2018 San Diego Journalist of the Year Andy Keats on the case. So
so if we're just talking facts here about the Seals, they're 0-3 since deciding to bring Stephen Woods back as the PA announcer.
That's a fair assessment.
That's a fact.
Right.
I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying... They're 0-3 since they brought him back.
We can't necessarily say there's correlation,
no.
But there is certainly...
Causation.
Causation.
Yes,
there.
100%.
And as a hypothesis, I think that's a valid hypothesis.
Craig was really what held that team
together. The question really is, what would Craig Elston do? Would the performance be better with Craig Elston?
I mean, I think a better question is, what is Woods doing different? You know, is he not hyping up the team?
That's right.
You know,
has the prep gone downhill?
Yeah.
Is he only working out in Miami with his brother instead of actual
a dedicated hype coach? Yeah.
Mailing it in.
Yeah.
Mailing
These
it
are
in.
The questions we need you to answer, Jack.
He's gotten too comfortable. Fine. He's I'll gotten too comfortable.
This. Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right, guys. Good meeting of the Gwintelligence gang.
Yes.
Great. We should before I go back to school. Hopefully there'll be something else that happens with the team, and we can meet up again.
Please, something else happen.
Yeah.
Something good.
Yeah. We'll see. But this might be the team. This might be it.
It's probably the team.
It's Grisham Mania.
Oh, it's Ting Mania.
All right, guys. For another edition of Good Intelligence Podcast, go Padres.
Go Padres.
Go Padres.